Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are. Dan?
Yes, sir.
Dan?
What up?
How is, you're playing Civilization 6 now.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Civilization to play as?
So far, I've been mostly playing as Sumeria in honor of, Swery Carey over at Project Camelot. She loves the Sumerians and, believes they were involved with ancient aliens. So I've been playing as, Sumeria.
The war card is a good early early game military unit. So
that
I agree with you.
That is definitely one of the.
I think that's an important thing.
That's one of the attractions of it, certainly, because it allowed me in my last game that I was playing to conquer France real early.
Yeah, that's the trick.
Yeah, took over Paris and owned that.
Yeah, when you start playing on high difficulty, you always notice that the AI attacks your city as soon as possible in order to try and eliminate people from the early game.
Yeah. It is a great game since the turn-based structure of it. It is a great game to play while taking notes on Alex episodes. Because you need a little something.
You get
else.
That little time.
Yeah. Anytime, like, you're listening to Alex, right. You're paying attention to him, anytime there's something like, whoa, hold on. You can just write down the timestamp.
And you don't have to pause the game. You
exactly.
Don't have to do anything like that. You're
it's
good
great.
To go.
So thanks
Perfect.
To Prop Do out there for, pointing out that it exists and getting me down this damn rabbit hole.
I've had it for a year and a half, 2 years.
Well,
now.
It just came out on the Switch recently.
Ah, that's
so
right.
That's
I gotcha.
But what about you? What's your civilization?
What's my civilization?
Yeah.
You know, I go a lot of different ways. I like to play as Rome.
Trajan just fucked me over in my another
yeah.
recent game of mine.
Yeah, I'm
creating
sorry about
a fucking
that.
Religion and taking over my society with it.
I like to play as Egypt. I love building wonders. Mm-hmm. I play as China all the time because you can accelerate the wonder construction
uh-huh.
using workers.
Oh.
That's my thing, man.
Didn't know about that. Might have to play as China.
What are you talking about?
I'm
you didn't know about that?
My
oh, that's my favorite
I've
thing
only
to
had
do.
It for a few days.
Oh, yeah. I'll have like six wonders.
I haven't played Civilization since Civilization 4, I think. So it's been, you know, it's kind of a coming back into the waters
yeah.
for me. But I like it, and I'd like to give a shout out to Sid Meier. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Sid.
Second thing I want to give a shout out to something I mentioned to you, and I believe you watched a little bit of, and I just think everybody should enjoy it. It's on Netflix, the show Final Table.
Oh, man.
I think it's so good.
It is the most overproduced cooking show I have ever seen in my entire life.
There are some,
it is
there are
the
some issues.
The set deck on that must have cost $10 million.
There are some issues in terms of that.
Insane. The host is horrendously bad.
He's
garbage.
He says things a little bit too dramatically.
He's really bad.
Yeah, he has some problems. But the bigger picture of the show, I think, is so awesome.
Oh, the friendships.
The friendships.
Oh, the friendships.
And then also the like celebration of cultures
uh-huh.
in terms of like bringing in all these people who are very clearly celebrities in other countries, but no one knows who the fuck they are here.
No clue. Yeah.
It's so great. I think that there's such a like multicultural wonder to
it's,
it.
That's amazing.
I think they honor like ingredients and cultural cuisines very well on the show, to the point of like they went to some countries and the people like the guests chose the national dish of the country. I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
On the first episode where it's Mexico and they choose taco, I'm like,
yeah, like,
I know
what are we doing here?
I know what's
what are we
on
doing?
Here.
Come on, guys.
I expected that to be like what continues for
right.
the rest of the episodes.
Like, right.
Real stereotypical things, but they did a great job. And then,
my favorite is whenever they get past the first round of nonsense, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have the celebrity chef there. Mm-hmm. Not, and they don't pick like celebrity chefs like, Amelia or,
Lagasse.
Yeah. They pick like these eccentric geniuses who wander during this cooking part and they just start bothering people. Just
yeah.
like, hey, can I taste that? I'm going to taste that.
It's
and
very
then they'll,
casual.
And then they'll look at him just like, do you think that's done? And you're like, yes, you're
yeah.
amazing.
And Charles and Rodrigo, the that team.
Oh,
is just,
so great.
It's so great.
Yeah.
On a cooking show, like I've watched a lot of them where everyone just yells at each other.
Yeah.
It's like we're all stressed out. That their team is so awesome, but all the other teams are great too. Everyone loves each other.
And they spend so much time on these people's, cause all the celebrity or all the chef teams
yeah.
are like,
accomplished chefs.
And not just accomplished chefs, but they also, the other, like, the team was started because they have this backstory of, like, well, I was in Mexico studying for a while and I met this guy and then he came back to London and we became best friends. So now we're on the show together and they're so great.
Yep. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's
Everyone's
great.
Hugging all the time.
All the time there's hugging.
Oh, awesome.
All the time.
Everything is so uplifting.
Yeah.
And it's a celebration of globalism.
Yeah, so. Exactly. No. And it could not be more transparent in its, like, we have a job to do, and that's to get as many people as possible to realize that our differences make us great together.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's one of the big reasons why I wanted to give it a shout out on this specific show. Yeah. Knowledge Fight had so much anti-globalist propaganda on Alex's part.
Yeah.
It was really enriching.
Yeah. And it was within the first 20 minutes, I was like, this is globalist propaganda. Like, I was like, whoa, this is not subtle.
It's not propaganda.
It's
though.
Not propaganda. It's
a reflection.
Yeah. And it's a celebration, but it is not subtle.
No,
it is not subtle.
Not at all. But, neither is Alex. And
oh,
this is a show
nice.
I know a lot about. It.
There you go. That's a pretty good transition.
You?
I don't know anything about him.
And it doesn't matter because today's Wacky Wednesday.
Hey!
We've got a very interesting road to go down today. There's a lot of stuff that we'll see how it goes. I'm not sure how it will.
Oh, yeah.
But before we do that, I'd like to say something I am sure of, and that's thank you to some new donors.
Very nice.
First of all, I'd like to say Asha. Thank you so much. Might be Asha. I apologize if I got it wrong. I absolutely did because I said two different pronunciation,
could
so
be
one
either.
Of them is wrong.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Second, I'd like to say thank you so much to Victoria. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Vic.
Thank you very much, Victoria.
Vic, why did I shorten
your
name?
Why did you call it you? That was weird.
Shit's weird.
Are you sure? Is Vic Mensa's full name Victoria Mensa?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
All right.
Also, I'd like to say thank you to Anime Waifu. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Reach for the cartoons, my friend.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
not the way, never mind.
Mm. So also I'd like to say thank you to someone who took their donation, bumped it up a little bit.
Oh,
to
shit.
A little higher level. So I'd like to say thank you so much, Joshua. You are now a globalist.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark.
Bop, 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 bop.
Thank you so much, Joshua.
Thank you very much, Joshua.
If you would like to support our show, you can do so by going to knowledgefight.com, clicking that support the show button. We would appreciate it.
It would be very nice.
So Jordan, today we've got a real interesting Wacky Wednesday adventure.
Okay.
I believe I said 2 weeks ago that one of the things we would like to do is open up the fold in Wacky Wednesday.
Indeed.
And one of the other things I'd like to do is have a place where there's more ability to respond to audience suggestions of things. So along the lines, probably Wednesday will serve as a place where we fulfill some time travel requests. So I think that'll probably come up in Wednesdays in the future. But we also got a number of...
Yeah, we got a backlog of time travel requests.
We got a few we got to get to.
Yeah.
But there are also suggestions that people have made in response to our call for, like, who should we cover? Who else is out there? Wacky Wednesday style. And policy wonk Ian, probably a raptor princess. I can't remember. I should have made a spreadsheet.
Wait, you should have made a spreadsheet ranking our donors?
Or at least keeping track. I feel very bad. I forget. Everyone's a policy wonk. That's a broader term. More general term.
You got very defensive quick. I apologize.
I feel very bad about
it. I didn't mean to.
Policy wonk Ian sent in a suggestion of this guy named Coach Dave Dobenmeyer.
Coach Dave!
Yes, he is someone who has been covered a little bit by Right Wing Watch. He has said some terrifyingly homophobic things.
Is he a coach?
We'll get to him. This guy...
Is this like our doctor friends?
This guy has an intense backstory that we're going to get to in this episode.
He's the coach of a college football team at a university he invented.
Oh, that would be very on brand for our show. So Ian suggested this, and he linked to a Right Wing Watch article about him saying something about how his daughters aren't going to be lesbians even though they play softball because they're not ugly and fat, something along those lines.
Sure.
And that to me seemed like Bush League bigotry.
Yeah.
And
that's lowball.
That didn't entice me into wanting to do an episode about him.
Yeah, what are you going to research on that?
Whether or not all lesbians are ugly.
Isn't that kind
done
of the only
research.
Thing?
That's not the case. So I would say that would be almost ignorable. But then I was like, look, Ian has been a supporter of the show for a long time.
Yeah.
We really appreciate him a great deal. I'm going to go out of my way to see if there's more to dig into.
You got to do due diligence.
Absolutely.
He's earned it.
Yeah. So I looked into Dave and I watched a couple of his videos. I'm like, oh, motherfucker.
Please use the honorific of Coach.
I looked into Coach and I was like, yeah, there's something here.
Yeah.
So we're going to do an episode where we talk about maybe five videos that Coach Dave has put out into the world.
All right.
And explore him a little bit. And if you out there like what we're doing here, you like Coach, you might join the fold, might enter the arena of the immortals.
Oh, no.
The Wacky Wednesday Pantheon. Dun, 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 dun.
Nope.
We're going to start overproducing this.
Nope, we're not.
Like Final Table.
We're not doing it.
Also, by the way, while we're talking about this, winter,
oh, my favorite chef was Chef Dave.
The whole idea of Final Table is like, if you win, you get to sit down at the table with these iconic chefs.
Yeah, that's not how they became iconic, I don't think.
It's not. But also, I don't understand, like, you get a seat at the final table, but then, I watched the entire show, nothing else happens. Like,
yeah.
It's not like all of them then cook together. It's not like...
That would be fucking insane.
It's or
that would be the best episode.
Or
and now all the final table iconic eccentric genius chefs will make one dish.
Right. Or it's not like the winner is then on the level of these people.
Absolutely not.
Also, it's not like it's implied that he is now a judge on the next season along with these other nine.
He is the next Bachelor, though.
Could be. I just didn't understand what the guiding metaphor of the final table was, what it means. I understand it's great. You're honored
to
be there.
You just get to hang out. Yeah, you just get to hang out.
But that should have been what the show is.
You get to be in the green room of all these other chefs' places.
Call the fucking show. Get to hang out.
That sounds like a great show.
Sure. Anyway, sorry. I watched too much of that show the other day. So here, we're going to get into Coach Dave. And I'll probably just keep calling him Coach for the rest of this.
Sure.
But he runs a show called Pass the Salt. I don't know why that's the name of the show. I tried to figure it out. No idea.
Okay, so he's a coach.
Hold on to that.
His name is Coach Dave.
Yes.
Whether or not he's a coach is, at this point in time, nebulous.
I will say he was a coach. So you can say that one.
Okay. And then he decided to start a show and call it Pass the Salt.
Mm-hmm. You're following this so far.
All right.
Yeah, you got all the pieces you need.
Okay, so does... being formerly a coach, relate in any way? Does he have some part of his backstory where passing the salt is like an anecdote he tells?
Here's the thing. I don't know. I have no idea.
I played football. I don't think that's like a football term.
No, no. It's not like a flea flicker.
Yeah, no.
All right. Red 32. Pass the salt. No idea.
No.
There's probably a really simple...
That means we're going to do a jet sweep to the right side.
There's probably a real simple answer, and I just don't know it, and I apologize if it is just simple explanation.
Well, I mean, it's a common kind of saying, you know, like...
You bet it is.
Pass the salt.
You bet it is.
When you need salt to be passed.
So common that it factors heavily into the opening theme from his show, which...
He's got a theme?
You bet.
Oh, shit, we don't even have a theme.
Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time.
This is still
pass
going.
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed in this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading. Of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a coach, Dave Dobbenmeyer.
So that's the
wow.
Intro. That's a nice 40 second bumper there.
That's
a little excessive. Very 80s, 90s radio.
Yeah.
So Coach presents himself.
This is like Pardon the Interruption, but for Jesus.
He's very, very Christian. He presents himself as being on the radio, and he might be in some small markets or something like that. Can't find that information out.
Right.
I have no idea.
Right.
What I do know is that he has a YouTube channel, and most of the videos have under 1,000 views.
Right.
So one of the things that I was wrestling with when Ian brought this to my attention is like, is this punching down? Because we have more listeners than him, probably. And I think that, well, I don't know. I look with like radio. I don't know. I have no idea. He could have a secret huge radio audience.
That's entirely possible.
But based on the things I can see on YouTube, it seems like very low engagement. It seems like just a man sitting on a green screen that has a soccer stadium superimposed behind him.
Okay.
With about 10 people on Skype, who sometimes chime in and yell amen.
You know what?
It's bizarre.
Here's the problem. Everybody who would watch his show is sodium deprived.
Could be.
Because they've given him all their salt.
It could be.
Yeah, they can't even get up to see the computer.
Also, fun little trivia. I can't remember the name of the soccer club that did it, but one of them threatened to sue him because he was using their stadium.
See, he must have a huge audience because we have not been threatened to be sued by anybody.
We don't use any green screens, though.
No, that's true.
So yeah, his show is bizarre, and I was concerned about like the possibility of like this is just a inconsequential guy rambling in the wilderness. But as I started to listen to him more, I started to see things that were very important to bring up, and then at the same time, some commonalities with Alex Jones. He talks about how we need to be worried because Alex Jones is being censored and stuff like that. He clearly listens to Alex's show, and a lot of his narratives do track and follow similar patterns to Alex, like this one.
We're going to be faced, all of us, I believe, at some point, are going to be faced with some very, very difficult decisions, and I think most of them are going to revolve around finances. What's going to happen with money? What's money going to become? We know about Bitcoin and Litecoin and gold and silver and everything. There is certainly a financial, I don't want to use the term collapse, although that's probably a good term. There's a financial reckoning that's coming because we are so, so deeply in debt. All of us are.
So the financial collapse is coming.
Yeah.
You know, there is sort of that financial scaremongering a little bit. He talks about that a good bit.
But at least he does provide a far more rational reason for it than Alex ever does, which is just, we're all in debt.
Well, no,
like that, but
because Alex, if he didn't take the second step to yelling conspiracies about the Federal Reserve, that would be the way he described it. We're all in debt. Now, why are we in debt? Because of the Federal Reserve.
I suppose. Yeah. Fair enough.
It's just that Alex moves past that.
Right.
And sort of he's evolved his rhetoric a little more.
Fair.
So this is more understandable because it's vaguer. Because, yeah, absolutely. You could see a situation where people, they have diminished buying power because of all the debt that they're under. It makes him seem a little more reasonable that he doesn't go as far as Alex, perhaps. You didn't tune in here to hear financial advice. What you did tune in is to hear us talk about someone who's batshit insane.
Yes.
And you were asking if he is a coach. You want to get to the bottom of that.
Yeah, I need this. I need this Craig T. Nelson mystery solved real quick.
Well, thankfully, we don't have to wait too long to get to the bottom of that. Because in this next clip, Coach expresses something that is real troubling, and that is that he believes, I think, that we need to send missionaries to public schools.
All right.
And that leads to an understanding and a little bit of a revelation about his past that will be fun for all.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to make him mad. I'm going to really make him mad. Is it okay, Mark, if I make him mad? I do to make him mad.
Please, make me mad. Make us mad.
How dare you? Pastors, I'm talking to you, pastors. How
I thought you were talking to Mark.
You send your people from your church on a mission trip to you name it without even evangelizing your own public school. You won't even try to evangelize your own public school.
Cause there's laws.
Hey, coach.
Send people to the uttermost to the guttermost. Send them all around the world in the name of Jesus. Ain't even welcome in your own public school.
Amen.
And you don't
coach.
Try to do anything about it.
I thought you were making
know,
Mark
amen,
mad.
Sir.
That's not Mark.
I know. Why? Because, hey, can I tell you? I'm going to go to Honduras. It's safe down there.
What?
I'll be a foreigner. I'll go in there. It'd be safe.
I am already fine with that.
Hey, let's go to Columbus City School. Let's go to East High School. Oh, no. They don't need the gospel there, I guess.
So you were concerned about who that was chiming in. Like I said, he has a bunch of people on Skype, and most of them just every now and again yell, amen.
Wait. So they're...
It's very weird.
Oh, I thought it was like people in a Skype chat room. He has a bunch of people like in monitors on Skype on his show.
He probably has at least like 6 or 7 people who will chime in occasionally with amen.
Can you see them?
They have little, mini.
They're like picture in picture.
Yeah, yeah. There's right. like a row of five of them.
All right. So
along the right hand side.
Okay.
It's surreal.
So I'm thinking
like it's some sort of like Skype hangout or something
yeah.
like that. It's
yeah, yeah.
like a group chat Skype okay. situation. It's deeply fucked up.
I kind of see this a little bit like Hollywood Squares whenever they zoom in
off.
When they zoom in on the guy and then they have the picture in picture of the people who are the celebrities who are helping him.
Imagine Hollywood Squares, but only the three on the right.
Gotcha.
That's basically right. where you're at.
Sounds great.
It's a mess. So, Coach here, he's talking about how you need to send missionaries to the schools.
Yes.
And you,
illegally.
You nicely pointed
against
out
the law.
That that's a problem.
Against the law.
Here we go. It should be pointed out that Coach Dave Daubenmeyer is not a coach and hasn't been one for a very long time. That's because in 1999, he was sued by the ACLU because for years he'd been forcing his students to pray before and after games, passing
right.
out scripture to his players, and
great.
Basically trying to evangelize to them in a public school setting.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was doing what he's screaming about here back in 99 and got sued. Naturally, this led to some parents and community members filing complaints, and the ACLU took up their call. To this day, Coach claims he won money in the lawsuit after the ACLU settled out of court and gave him an undisclosed amount. In reality, the ACLU worked out a settlement and withdrew the case after the school and Coach agreed to put a stop to the practices that were found to be objectionable, which made progressing with the lawsuit unnecessary. And the only reason to proceed at that point would be to punish the school district, and the ACLU had no interest in that. The agreement set up a mechanism where the school was required to relay complaints involving Coach to the ACLU directly.
What?
Well, because that
Wait. So this is a coach at a small school.
I don't know if it was that small, but yeah.
Or at least an individual public school.
Yeah.
That now has to report directly to the ACLU.
The principal does. If the principal gets a complaint from somebody,
right.
he has to report it to
I
the
know,
ACLU.
But isn't that not the superintendent, not the actual ACLU.
Because his behavior was so out of control and had been going on for years,
yeah.
you have to assume that there might be a situation at the school in place where they're covering it up. Because spoiler alert, he's a pretty good coach.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, he's actually a really good coach?
He had undefeated seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit!
So in the same way that you have all these stories of abuses.
Is this angels in the outfield?
You have all these stories of abuses that would happen in Texas schools or something like that where football was king.
Yeah,
in these
yeah,
towns
yeah.
and stuff like that. You have a situation here where this guy is acting out of line in terms of evangelizing to students.
Right.
In a setting that it's inappropriate.
Right. He's the Joe Paterno of Jesus, essentially.
I'm uncomfortable with that, but I am going to allow it.
Yeah.
So the ACLU set up this thing where they had to do that in order to make sure that he was fulfilling the agreement that led to them withdrawing the lawsuit.
Right.
Because all they were interested in is
hey,
his
stop
behavior
it. Just stop it.
Right. So
we don't. We're the ACLU. We don't want like $100 million. We just want you to stop fucking with kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a part of the deal, Coach Dave could keep his job pending any further complaints. He got another contract for a year and that would undoubedly have been renewed
and
if
then
there weren't
received
more complaints.
Further complaints.
No.
Oh.
After a year, he grew bored of not religiously abusing children.
He quit because he couldn't religiously abuse children.
Straight up quit.
This is a man who believes his principles and is actually not a very good coach. If he's a quitter, that's not a good coach.
But we'll see what happens.
That's
after
not
that.
An example you want to set to your kids.
So none of this is to mention the fact that settling the case cost the London School District approximately $18,000 in attorney's fees and court costs, which just sort of gloss over in Coach's telling of the story.
He won a huge court settlement.
After this, Coach was pretty much unhireable by public schools. So
what?
He just,
why?
He became a religious wacko. He founded his ministry, Pass the Salt, and an organization called Minutemen United. While the latter sounds a lot like a military group, it appears that they're mostly just into complaining. From their website, their list of victory includes, quote, successfully lobbing mayor, a regional grocery store, to remove entry-level porn magazines from their shelves, and, quote, aiding a local Columbus community in ousting a homosexual bathhouse from their community.
Entry-level porn magazines.
I'm guessing that just means, like, Muscle Mag or, like, Lowrider
yeah,
or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, what is that, like Maxim?
Yeah, that's got to be what it is. Congratulations, I guess. You got rid of a spa, and now
yeah.
this grocery store can't have bodybuilding magazines.
Yeah, you did it.
Woo! So,
on a minute's notice, they're ready to stop entry-level porn mags from being in a grocery store.
Now, these groups not only wasted everyone's time with their clear public expressions of gay panic, they also were involved in, quote, protesting the removal of the Ten Commandments from Adams County, Ohio, and traveled to Montgomery, Alabama to stand alongside Judge Roy Moore. Now,
it always gets worse.
Oh, it's gonna get so much worse.
It always gets worse. We can't just have a fucking Wacky Wednesday that doesn't turn into a disaster.
On this Wacky Wednesday, there's like five hammers coming. It's gonna be real bad.
Son of a bitch.
So along the way, as he's creating this Pass the Salt ministry and working with News with Views and
needs some explanation of
Minutemen United, I don't understand.
So furious about that.
I promise you, I'm not just playing it close to the vest.
I know. No, I know. I believe you. And
there has to be a reason.
It is infuriating that is the one mystery we can't solve on this fucking podcast.
It's weird. So along the way, as he's creating these ministries, he had also been coaching football at the Fairfield Christian Academy in Ohio, but he also got fired from that job in 2012, clearly for reasons that didn't have anything to do with too much praying. It's the Christian Academy.
You can be too Christian for the Christian Academy.
I believe his quote was, he just can't help but speak his mind or something along those lines.
Right. Whatever that means.
Probably, I'm just a dick. So, in 2014, he tried to return to coaching secular high school football. Unfortunately, public outcry led to, a change.org petition. Against him being hired by the school board.
This guy makes big enemies.
Yeah. And then also the school board, of Lakewood High School voted 3-2 against him being allowed a job. And so he has not been allowed to come back to public school football coaching.
That's crazy. For real, he could get a job in my hometown fucking tomorrow. There are so many places where you can go where people would not only welcome the fact that you were censured by the fucking ACLU. It would be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it is a sort of feather in his cap, and that's kind of why he was able to create his ministries in the first place.
Right.
On that sort of celebrity of, I got, the ACLU came after me,
you all hate the ACLU.
That makes him sort of more relevant to these right-wing extremist worlds.
Do you know what I say to that? Pass the salt!
So that's a little bit about his coaching resume and where
I'm trying out different ways to use pass the salt that might make sense later on.
I don't know what inflection you're gonna give it to make it.
I don't know.
Pass the salt.
Maybe it's like a code word that Christians say that we're not allowed to learn.
We are the salt.
Like it's the passcode.
Could be we're the salt of the earth.
Oh, that could be right. Why would you want to pass people then?
Don't know.
Ugh.
I know that historically salt was like a super luxury item. You know,
for sure.
It was used to pay people in the past.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
earn
yeah.
your salt, that sort of thing.
In Game of Thrones, bread and salt is hospitality. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it's really all about.
You think this guy's a big
He's a big
George R.R. Martin.
I swear to God, this is G.R.R.M. all over it.
It's possible. So, like I said, I noticed some Alex Jones adjacent narratives that he was saying. And there are others that I didn't get into, in case we cover this show more. If the audience likes, there is a lot that I can get into.
Holding a lot to the vest,
but
not past the salt.
But I will reveal some cards. And one of them is another commonality with our show. And that is a guest that coach sits down with
all right.
that we have talked about before.
Hi, friends. This is Coach Dave Dobenmeyer at newswithviews.tv at newswithviews.com. And I got to tell you something. I have got a treat for you today like you can't even imagine. And those of you who have been watching our interviews, you know, we did a good one with Dr. Edwin Vieira and D.V. Kidd, and we had on J.B. Williams. And, I mean, we've just been doing some great stuff. But I got one today that I believe is just going to knock off the socks of everybody who watches this. In fact, I'm going to introduce to many of you a gentleman maybe you've never even heard of who has been underground. I hate to use that term, but they forced him underground, has gone underground as far as mainstream media doesn't want anything to do with this guy. And I believe that Dr. James David Manning is probably the most dangerous man in all of America to the Obama administration. And Dr. Manning and
when
I had the opportunity to meet about a year and a half ago through our mutual friend Butch Paul down in West Virginia, the conference that we spoke at. And our hearts were immediately knitted together.
Their hearts are knitted together. He has a fucking episode where he sits down with James David Manning, the guy who on 2 weeks ago we listened to him talk about how he wants armies to rise up and kill gay
people. Right, right, right. I don't imagine, I can't imagine what they bonded over.
I can't imagine either.
Yeah.
And
must be just their love of the Lord.
And lest you think that this is a random thing and he just has Manning on and doesn't know anything about him, he legit says in this interview with him, I listen to you every day. I am a huge fan of your show. So he has no reason to not be aware of what Manning stands for, which is murdering gay people.
Yeah.
Because they're gay.
Almost entirely.
Yeah.
What's Butch Paul's story?
I don't know. I'd love to.
Wait, so Reverend Manning.
Yeah.
And Coach Dave.
They have a lot.
Have a mutual friend named Butch Paul?
That makes total sense though. They're both religious zealots.
Right.
Who hate gay people and black people.
Right.
So.
Agreed.
Why wouldn't they bond?
But why would they? Who's the mutual friend? Who is the guy? Who is
another
the triangle?
In this
hypotenuse.
It's
man.
Only geographically weird because, you know, Manning's up in Harlem.
Yeah.
And you got, Coach down in Ohio. Mm. So the only thing is geographical distance.
Right.
Philosophically,
so I assume Butch Paul lives in Pennsylvania?
He must.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
He's somewhere along the line.
Pennsylvania Dutch.
Pennsylvania Butch.
The philosophical connection is so strong between them. It doesn't appear maybe initially that they would be super in line with each other, but like I said, they're homophobes who hate black people and love weird versions of Christianity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why wouldn't they hit it off really well?
No, that sounds like a match made in hell. I would watch them as a team on Final Table.
Their food would suck.
That would be terrible.
So we're going to listen to a little bit of Manning's appearance here, talking with Coach, just to really, you know, flesh out and reinforce that these guys are fucking dicks in the same way.
We can't allow it. I can no longer allow these false prophets, these lying prophets, these homosexual freaks in the pulpit.
Manning.
So the music that's coming in here is on the show. I didn't add this. This isn't like
this is from his
official channel. Swelling music behind it.
This is like an ESPN show, but about Jesus
and
or whatever. Or, well, about weird fucking
and
creepy Jesus.
And also, I want to be clear about this. I was watching the video when Manning says, "I cannot abide by these homosexuals and the preachers and all that."
Mark goes, "Amen."
No. Coach smiles. He smiles immediately after he says homosexuals.
See,
like,
now,
it's almost like a, yeah, we're getting it. We're getting down to it. He's so excited.
Doing what they're doing, robbing the people blind, leading the people down the path to pathway to hell, and having people thinking that they're secure, watching children fall apart, watching families fall apart. I can't stand
this
by and watch that happen.
CNN.
I can stand by and watch that long-legged Mac Daddy, that quasi-Muslim freak Obama.
God damn it.
What he is doing.
Long-legged
justice
Mac
is
Daddy?
Justice and truth is truth.
You don't know about long-legged Mac Daddy? That's Reverend Manning's catchphrase.
That's his catchphrase.
Well, like, we heard the one that he said, and the boom shakalaka go
right.
That's another one of his catchphrases. But he rose to prominence in
the circles. On the back of a long-legged
Mac
Daddy.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. He came to prominence because of characterizing Barack Obama as a pimp.
Man, but that's a good turn of phrase. God, you gotta give it to Manning.
The first time I heard of Obama, it was right there on a big old pair of tits.
It's
another one of his catchphrases.
He's just, the man knows how to turn a fucking phrase.
I don't know. Let's not say too many positive things about this monster.
But if you're gonna go with that, exactly. It's not the best thing to say, but it's way better than like, show me his birth certificate. Like, no.
Well, Manning does say that too.
Well, of course he does, but it's way better whenever you say it like a fucking lunatic.
Yeah. So, Coach having Manning on gives him what appears to be like a really fun, excuse to, talk shit about black people.
To be filled with hate.
Well, it gives him cover to be really, really against. And I want to say that we're going to listen to this clip. He's going to say black a bunch of times, but.
And I'm sure he's going to do it in a very respectful way.
Sure. I don't know if it'll play on the sound of the episode, but I saw the wave files of this and it's interesting that I could see looking at the wave file. I was like, oh, that's him saying black.
Boo!
There is a tenor to the way he speaks that is different. When he says black, there's some vocal quality that changes. And I think it's perceptible from listening, but if you put this episode into Audacity, you'll fucking see a difference, in the way he speaks specifically when he says black.
That's weird.
You came to my knowledge just before the election. That's clear back in, what would that be, 2008, because you were and are so unique, Dr. Manning, because not only are you a man of God, but you are a black man of God, but even more unusual is you were a black man of God trying to warn people about what you called this long-legged Mac Daddy, Barack Hussein Obama.
It sounds bad when he says it.
What was it that gave you the heads up 5 years ago? And you were speaking at that time, really, Dr. Manning, to the black community. I was watching some of the videos and some things that you said to black people in particular. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And here's what it was.
Yeah, you can hear it.
In my heart, because it's not a black or white thing. As I like to say to folks, there's only two races, those racing for heaven and those racing for hell. And here was a black man standing in the pulpit and speaking the truth to black men.
Why?
What was it, Dr. Manning, that really opened your eyes to the long-legged Mac Daddy long before anybody else really saw it?
It was Jesus.
Okay. Do you feel like you
oh God, it could not be more obvious.
It's weird. There's a different vocal quality. It's accusatory.
I didn't realize that you could say black the way that you say Jew with a hard J.
Yeah, there's a hard B there.
Black, like, whoa.
Yeah, there is.
That is uncomfortable to say at one time, let alone every time you say the color.
And when I listened to it, it did feel like, ew, this guy is being gross. But then when I saw it in the waveform, that was when I was like, oh man, there is something that completely fucking weird and different about the way he's verbalizing.
Absolutely audible.
It's nuts.
Absolutely.
And I
Jew is going out to Jews, Jewing things, Jewing all the stuff, and he's doing it to Jews! Like,
I think
Jesus, man!
I think you're right. I think that's...
Wow!
It's
that's fucked up that you would even say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh!
Mm.
Ugh!
Also, spoiler alert, there's an episode I listened to that we're not going to be going over about how Jews need Jesus.
Oh, yeah?
And man, it is so fucked up. It is just him sitting there being like, I don't want to do this episode, but God has put it on my heart. I don't want to fucking do this.
Nah, you could just say no.
I don't want to do this.
Uh-uh.
Guys, hey,
then
everyone,
don't.
On Skype, I don't want to do this.
Then don't. Stop right there.
Jews aren't saved.
No!
It's crazy. It's just, all right, man. I guess that's definitional in your worldview. Yeah, sure, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Then he spends an hour talking about how Jews are the devil and how they're of their father and all that. It's like, wow. And he keeps asking for, like, can someone say amen so I don't feel crazy? Amen. It's nuts.
That I like.
This show is wild.
The Jeb Bush, please clap, but if you're God, yeah, like that, that's nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Jesus.
So, from the vocalization and the verbal pattern we saw there, I got red flags, quite frankly. White flags, more or less. Unless you think that that was based on nothing, here is Coach.
I don't think any single person listening to this point is like, oh, that's probably based on nothing.
Well, to be fair, other than that, we haven't really seen racism necessarily so far.
Did you hear him say black?
No, I'm saying other than that.
Well, I know, but that seems like there's a backstory behind saying the word black like that.
You would think. But I just want to be totally fair and say, like, you okay. might hear that and not think it's as big a deal as
I don't
we
know
are
how.
Saying. But this next clip is real bad.
See, Dr. Manning, I forgot to mention at the beginning, your church
black.
Is in Harlem. And what would most of us out here in the Midwest, we would just consider, if I dare say, just a jungle. We think of Harlem as being a jungle.
Whoa!
And you are right in the midst of it, surrounded, I'm sure, by mainly black people living in that area.
He did it again!
Here you are, a guy who rises up in his pulpit and begins to speak to black people that this black savior
Jesus.
Is not the savior at all. And the truth is, Dr. Manning, I wrote about this, I don't know, a couple, 4 years ago maybe it was. I said that many black
Using
people
black
are
ink.
More black than they are Christian. And when you began to say that, boy, the feathers began to fly, didn't they?
Well, when you said it, no one listened because you have a very small audience. And Reverend Manning said long-legged Mac Daddy, and everybody's like, aha.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Got a lot of attention for that. So when he starts, look, this is gross. I mean, the idea of calling Harlem a jungle is bad. That's bad, number one.
Yeah.
But then to then immediately say you're surrounded by black people, that is
as though that
that's elucidating what you meant by jungle.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the next thought that he has. I call it a jungle because it's full of black people.
It is.
What are you doing?
You are surrounded by black people.
Right.
Which he says as a problem. He says you are surrounded by, you're in a jungle, as we assume in Ohio. Once again, proving Ohio should also be on our list of states with Mississippi and Louisiana.
It's going to end up being the whole country eventually.
I know, but
it's going to be
that...
everything except Boulder, and we're going to be like, you're annoying, Boulder.
Boulder, you're doing all right. You keep on doing what you're doing.
You're high as shit, but you're also annoying.
Actually, I called it Boulder.
Oh, boy. Can't wait to see that in the WAV file. So, I mean, this is just like, I think having Manning on gave Coach sort of excuse and cover to be a racist asshole.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Manning loves it because he also hates black people.
Yeah.
So the two of them just sort of tee off a bit and they have a great time. They talk a bit about...
There's nothing white supremacists love more than a black white supremacist.
There's such a great moment.
It's the greatest.
There's such a great moment where they're talking about how Reverend Manning did that mock trial about Obama.
Yes, I recall.
And fucking Coach is like, I heard about that. I really wanted to come. I wished I could have been there.
Right.
I believe that.
I believe Judge Reinhold was overseeing that trial.
Less credible judge. I think it was Manning's mailman. So they talk about that a little bit, and there's this really interesting thing that happens. Like, Manning is saying, like, I live really close to Columbia University, and I went down to the coffee shop, and no one remembered him being there. I went down and I talked to people at the black bookstore and no one remembers him. What's the turnover at that bookstore, first of all? Second, it just like he's building this argument about like, I talked to a bunch of people, no one remembers Barack Obama being there.
Proof.
And what he doesn't do is talk about anything real, like a transcript from the university. He does say that he did get a degree from Columbia, but of course, that is just cover. That's the CIA got him a degree from there in order to, who knows.
Show me the birth certificate.
See, when you get these people, they believe all of this. Like, I talked to someone at a coffee shop, they didn't remember him, and that's proof that he wasn't there.
Sounds right.
He does have a degree from Columbia, which to normal people is proof that he went to Columbia.
I don't understand why you would think that.
They use that as evidence that he wasn't there because it's fake.
Yep. That makes sense.
It's so nonsensical.
No, it works.
So that's most of what they talk about, is like these dumb fucking ideas. And a lot of them, in terms of the Obama conspiracies, we've already talked about because of adjacency to Manning or Alex Jones, but a new one came up, and I thought it was really funny.
Oh, we got a new conspiracy?
So one more clip with Manning here. We get a new conspiracy that is dumb.
They'll call you a birther. Anybody that questions any of his background, they call him names to try to discredit him. But the fact remains that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama.
Wait, you called him long-legged Mac Daddy to discredit
their
him.
Law licenses. Now, Dr. Manning, you don't do that just because you get tired of practicing law. You know, I'm an educator. I spent 20 some years in public education. I keep my degree up. I keep my license up to date. Dr. Manning, who knows when I might need it? So why would Obama
That's just good business
forfeit
sense, though.
His law license?
The only reason you turn in a law license is to cut a deal with the bar to not prosecute
okay.
you, whatever it was criminally
right.
that they found that you did. You can cut a deal and they will allow you to surrender your license and therefore you will not be prosecuted and sent to jail. Same thing for Obama. Same thing for Michelle. Listen, you don't go to Harvard and get a law degree from Harvard and then turn around and pass the bar and all of a sudden turn that thing in. Why are you not to surrender if you say, oh, someone say, well, you know, he's going to be the president. He realized he didn't need a law license anymore. I mean, he's not going to be president forever. And besides, there's no reason to turn in a law. There are plenty of politicians.
Yeah, you know how all the presidents just go back to law?
But you don't turn in your law license.
This is based on a chain email. This is just a chain email conspiracy that went around.
Okay.
The people who are in charge of the, like, Illinois bar were like, no, they weren't involved in any investigation.
Yeah.
They just, The issue with maintaining a law license requires education. You have to go in for classes, and you also have to pay for the registration
and
stuff like that.
Yeah.
Michelle and Barack Obama decided that they didn't want to do that anymore, as Barack Obama had been in the House, Illinois House, since 1996, and had aspirations to become a senator and then become president and all that. He had a path forward that he wanted to go in, and it wasn't practicing law. Whether it was even before that, community organizing and things like that, that doesn't require a law degree. All it does is cost you money and time. So they decided, we're not going to maintain this. Now, spoiler alert, even if you let your law degree lapse, you can take classes and pay a fee and get it back.
Yeah.
They didn't surrender shit.
Yeah.
None of that happened. If Obama today wanted to start practicing law, which, by the way, would be nuts and almost inappropriate.
It would be insane.
Can you imagine if you're in court and the prosecutor or defense attorney
was a former president, Barack Obama? Fuck that.
That is going to bias the court.
Oh, you think?
I think that would be
a little bit.
But if he wanted to practice law outside of a courtroom or something like that, maybe give legal advice in an official capacity or something like that.
Sure.
Which still would be weird. But if
weird
he wanted
shit.
To do that, he could. He'd just have to pay a fee and go in for like a update class or whatever.
Yep.
That's all it would take. Because they follow the proper channels in order to inactivate their law degrees. Actually, I'll be honest, Barack Obama probably can't do that because his status is retired. He retired. There's inactive and retired.
Uh-huh.
Michelle Obama's degree is just inactive. Barack Obama's retired. So he may not be able to just pay a fee and get back his standing.
Man.
But all this is such bullshit. It's just a,
imagine
it's just
if,
a chain letter.
Imagine if Michelle Obama just suddenly was like, hey, guess what? I'm a public defender now. Like, that would be bananas.
It would, but I still have the same feeling that we already discussed, that I think it would bias courts.
Exactly.
I think it might be more problematic than it's worth, although it would be really cool if she took on only, like, big corporate clients or something like that. I see a hero story out of it, but the finer details
do
of
you,
it are,
do you mean
are
people,
real murky.
People, like, suing big corporations, not, like, she takes on Wells Fargo as a client.
No, takes them on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Against them.
Yeah.
But
that'd be great.
Yeah, we're just fantasy booking here.
Yeah.
So
we're fantasy booking public defenders.
Yeah. So we have here the mysterious name of Pass the Salt. We have a history of having the ACLU tell you can't force religion on your kids,
right,
at schools, and him being like, "Nah, I quit."
Was he ever an educator? I mean, I know he was a coach. Did he teach like PE too?
I can't speak to that. I assume probably.
Yeah.
So, anyway, we get back to this episode.
Yeah.
And, coach, we got a new episode here, of his show. And the name of this episode was, something that I could not resist. 'Cause this guy ostensibly is just like a super religious weirdo. He's just a horrible conservative dick.
Yeah.
But this episode covers some topics that feel very at home on Wacky Wednesday.
Hmm. Aliens?
I'm going to throw something on the table right now. Real quickly. We were going to do a whole show on it. And I left some of you hanging yesterday with this whole thing about the Mandela effect and Matrix being in the Bible.
Okay.
All that. I'm going to show you something. Jared, let's do this real quickly, Jared. It says Lion in the Lamb. Lion and the Lamb. Now, guys, as Jared's getting that up there, I want you to turn to Isaiah 11. I think it's Isaiah.
You think?
Isaiah 11.
Or Ezekiel.
Verse 6.
Or Corinthians.
I said
could
that.
Could have been 1 Kings.
Probably wrong.
Or Elias, the WWE
I'm sure
superstar
that's
Elias.
Could have been.
I'm not going to take the whole show talk about the Mandela.
Don't dare call it WWE.
We're kind of hit with the fashion as we left yesterday. So let me, in the most simple terms that I can make it, let me tell you what's going on. They're talking about parallel universes.
Right.
Parallel universes.
Bernstein versus Berenstein Bears. Totally get it.
A lot of this stuff is all about artificial intelligence.
Swear to God, Sinbad was
the
superhero.
Trying to cross the spectrum from the natural world in which we live to a, what they're calling a parallel universe. Now, I would call it the demonic realm. I would call it different realms.
So,
What, you, these people are going to call it parallel universes? I would call it parallel realms. That's a very different
with
thing.
With demons. He blames CERN, of course.
He blames CERN.
Of course,
yeah,
which
naturally.
Is right in line with Project Camelot.
I think CERN is at fault.
This fucking dick decided to do an entire show where, well, actually, I'll say the first 20 minutes of it are just him talking about, like, some speech he's going to be giving and, like, there's a cookout. I don't know. It's a lot of plugs at the beginning. But the rest of the show is all about the Mandela effect. And he believes it's real. And he believes one of the biggest proofs of it.
Is God
doing
that
it? It's demons. No, it's demons.
Oh, it's demons.
Spoiler alert, I think it's time-traveling demons. But be that as it may,
okay.
One of his big arguments is that everyone knows that this image of the Christian utopia is a lion laying down with a lamb.
Of course.
When in the Bible it says a wolf will lay down with a lamb. Now, I will explain exactly why people misremember this in a minute. And he accidentally does.
What is it, Robert Blake?
Nope, we'll get to it. But he accidentally says why a little bit later. But he's going to make a huge deal out of this and how the Bible has been changed by demons.
Wait, what?
Can you stop it, Jared? This goes on for 3 minutes of history of talking about the lion laying down with the lamb. But the Mandela effect has made it so you cannot find that in your Bible.
So he's just played a long clip of people saying the lion lays down with the lamb. Now, hold on.
Okay.
Hold
okay.
your horses.
All right.
Hold
All
your,
right.
hold your
All
lions
right.
and lambs.
I'm loving it. I like it.
Specifically, wherever you are right now, look up Isaiah 11:6 and you will see the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb and the leopard shall lie down with the kid and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together. A wolf will lay down with the lamb. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The idea.
Real quick, he just said the lion and the fatling there, and someone, one of the guys he has on Skype, chimes in a little bit later. Is like, fatling is just a term for lamb. So he kind of already invalidated himself. But
of the lion and the lamb in Isaiah 6
and the 11, wardrobe
6, is no longer there. That's the Mandela effect. I'll get to it more here in a minute. I'm gonna throw that out there right now. The wolf, not the lion, the wolf!
So here's my problem with this theory.
Do you have one?
I have a number.
Just
one. One of the big ones is, so the Bible has been changed.
Yeah.
But none of the other pop culture that involves this has. You know what I'm saying? Like poems that have been written that involve the lion and the lamb and stuff like
right.
that. Speeches people have given. None of that changed?
No.
How is this just specifically one thing that has changed? This is my problem with tons of these Mandela effects. Is that, like, they seem like, okay, you have to assume malevolent intelligence behind the changes. Otherwise, everything else would have changed along with it.
Right. But it's chaotic evil on our Dungeons and Dragons alignment.
I don't know if it's chaotic.
Because it has to be, it's almost prank-like. To only change the one passage in the Bible that ostensibly everybody is referencing in order to make everybody look kind of stupid.
Well, Coach likes to make the argument that this is why there's another verse in the Bible about how you need to write the word of God on your heart.
Right.
Because that's not going to change with the Mandela effect. So he makes the argument that God was saying, write the word of God on your heart. So when these demons time travel and go back and change things, you will know the correct word of God.
Right.
Now my second.
Right. So we're bordering on time traveling Nazis trying to change the future.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
My second problem with this is lion lays down with the lamb, the wolf lies down with the man is a superficial difference that has zero meaning. The idea of it is a predatory animal lays down with prey. That's it. That's all. You can have the exact same meaning behind a wolf and a lamb and a lion and a lamb. It doesn't fucking matter.
Which, again, is why it has to be chaotic evil. Somebody just fucking with you.
It's time trolling. It's time
exactly.
travel trolling.
Yeah. Exactly. It's again, just, it's Loki.
He's just trying to.
I wouldn't be surprised if Roger Stone had a time traveling machine. That's the type of shit he would do.
He's just trying to trigger Coach.
A worthwhile task.
So anyway, this is
if that's all Stone was doing, I'd be 100% on board with Stone.
This is not the only Mandela effect the Coach is concerned with, though. And in this next clip, he sounds like a goddamn stoned freshman in a dorm.
I don't understand how Shazam didn't star Shaquille O'Neal, but instead, wait.
It was Kazam. It was Shaq, and then Shazam was, yeah, who cares?
Okay, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you a video here.
Get ready for your mind to be blown.
Right now, all right.
In your mind, the little Monopoly guy. Remember the guy on the Monopoly box? You remember him?
All right.
Uncle Pennybags?
What was his name?
Sign me up.
Mr. Moneybank, Moneybags, or
close.
Something like that. Ask yourself this.
Oh, that's the Mandela
effect.
Did
he have a monocle on his eye?
Didn't.
Or not?
You just think that because of Mr.
Peanut. Ask yourself this.
Do
you remember the Berenstain Bears? Anybody remember the Berenstain Bears?
Yeah, baby.
Remember that when you were raising your kids, the Berenstain Bears? How did you spell Berenstain? Anybody remember how you spelled Berenstain Bears?
Depended on what part of the country you were in.
What? Well,
how did you spell it?
I never read it.
What? That's what you have to say?
Bears. I know how it was spelled. On and on and on. These anomalies are popping up.
They're
not. People said, well, that's not the way I remembered it.
Your memory is fallible.
That's why eyewitness destiny has been proven to be kind of silly.
What did Forrest Gump say about life? What was life? What was this? What was that phrase? Do you remember?
It was made of deer.
Life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
So real quick, the Mandela effect that is about this is the actual quote from the movie is life was like a box of chocolates, but everyone remembers it as life is like a box of chocolates. Now, the reason for this is because when Forrest Gump was speaking, he was talking about what mama used to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, if you listened carefully, that guy who just answered Coach's question said, life was like a box of chocolates. He said it correctly.
Yeah, because he's part of the Mandela effect.
No, he said it accurately the way that the quote actually is. Now, let's hear what Coach says in response.
That'd be great if immediately after that he just goes, I never saw it.
Is it life is like a box of chocolates or life was like a box of chocolates? When Forrest Gump was sitting there and he's saying to the girl beside him, my mama always said that life is like a ball of box of chocolates. Life is. No. Life was. It now says. Okay, so Jared, sit back with me. We may not watch this whole thing, but this is going to explain to you briefly what the Mandela effect is supposed to be. Go ahead and play that, Jared.
So the guy who answered it said life was like a box of chocolates when he said the quote. And then as soon as Coach asked him is or was, he started to question himself and said is. Huh. So the other thing, after this, he plays this long clip of people, like it's just a video that some a YouTube clip of someone explaining the Mandela effect about how it was named after the idea that this this one person thought that Nelson Mandela had died in prison.
Right. Realized that
after the actual death of Nelson Mandela, posted about it, found a bunch of other people thought the same thing too, and then they started.
Yeah.
So he plays the part of the video that explains like this, all this phenomenon stuff, but immediately stops it at the exact point when a memory researcher is about to explain how all this works.
About how
there are suggestibility things, especially when you hear things like, oh, it does sound right.
It's a mimetic disease almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is just a bunch of people reinforcing their own, like, it's almost a pack animal kind of situation where it's better to agree with somebody than it is to disagree.
They're totally wrong. It is demons.
This is so, I know we don't understand the degree of this, but we're going to try to teach the next generation what the Bible says from memory of stuff that we've been taught.
Or are we?
We know that the lion will lay down with the lamb.
Will demons?
The next generation is going to say, Dad, you're crazy. It doesn't say that.
It's a wolf.
It doesn't say that anywhere in the Bible.
And with technology, you got to think about before there were phones. They had no conception that you could send voice down a wire and voice would appear somewhere else.
Yep, they that's how phones
would
work.
Have believed it. Ever in a million years.
Nope. Well, but in about 7,000 years, they would believe
in
it.
In our
yes.
timeline, that's being caused by things we are doing. We've created the machines that are creating the interruption of our physics.
What?
This is accidentally a very strong argument for climate change.
This is bananas.
Yeah. So he's like, we couldn't have imagined the kind of damage that we would be doing with all these technologies we've invented. Yep. Expand on that.
Agreed.
Nope. Not going to do that.
Oh, no?
our universe.
No, it's the problem is our technology has broken our timeline, not our fucking planet.
Folks, think about all this. Just think about this. Think about things that 40 years ago when you were a kid, just 40 years ago, time machines.
Sure.
Back to the Future. Remember that? Back to the Future. Remember
Marty,
how in Back to
we've
the Future,
got to go back.
The history was disappearing right off the page as he was reading it, right? As his dad wouldn't stand up
movies.
And be a man, his picture
These guys
was disappearing.
Just cannot
and
figure out what reality is.
History was being rewritten. Think about all of the time travel things that we used to hear about. Think about George Jetson
think
when
about
you were
it.
Talking to people on television.
Think about
his
boy Elroy.
See him and talk to him. And how otherworldly that all seemed. See, this, what I believe is happening is all connected to this whole thing of
there's a robot
alien,
made
demonic otherworldly technology.
So real quick, I want to put a real fine point on that. He literally just said what I think is going on is
otherworldly
demonic technology. Now hold on. Let me finish the thought.
Okay. Yes, I need to.
It's been around forever.
Dave.
And we've learned how to harness. Yeah, Rod.
That's CERN.
So
congratulations to Roger and his new grandson yesterday.
Thank you very much. So when Martin Luther
King congratulations, Roger.
Had his speech and he said, the lion will lay with the lamb. Where did that come from if that is wrong?
Well, I can explain that for you. The lion and the lamb thing is a very simple thing to explain.
Yes.
The lion lays down with the lamb comes from the Elvis Presley song Peace in the Valley that came out in 1957. The other instance,
demons.
The other instances of people quoting the verse are actually people quoting the Elvis song because
demons.
It has better rhythm.
Demons.
If you say the wolf lies down with the lamb, that's kind of a little bit clunkier coming off your tongue. There's an alliterative quality to the lion and the lamb, which is why a songwriter would bring that to the table. The song would not have worked with wolf, and Elvis took a creative license because the actual meaning is not changed by a lion or a wolf being the one that lies down with the lamb.
I don't know.
So all of the examples that he uses, these people giving speeches, even Martin Luther King, these speeches all came out after this hit song of Elvis's, Peace in the Valley. So it infiltrated people's minds, this articulation of the lion lays down with the lamb, because it does sound better.
It sounds
better than wolf lies down with the lamb.
Right.
This is a totally simple, and no one questioned it. That's the bigger story, is that it took 50 years for Christians to realize that they were saying the wrong thing.
We hate Elvis so much for his hips and all of that shit. God damn it if the man doesn't write a catchy phrase.
But even if you don't realize that where that sort of, meme comes from, that sort of linguistic change comes from, that's most likely where it comes from.
Yeah.
It comes from someone taking creative license with a verse. Elvis wasn't quoting scripture. He was writing a song. And so people just, because it sounds better, have used it. And over time, it's become the accepted version of what lies down with a lamb, lion.
Well, it's not like anybody, and
it's not like Elvis is one of the biggest musicians of all time.
No, dude, his later catalog, way better. It's
still
like
a wacky Wednesday episode about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, in the, which that was written in what, Isaiah?
Yeah, Isaiah 11:6.
Yeah, so that would have been written in
before 1957.
Well,
I'll say that much.
It would have been written in what? It would have been written in Greek, right?
Probably.
Yeah, something like that.
Maybe Aramaic. Probably,
so
probably
why
Greek.
Would
probably
why would
Greek.
Anybody have ever needed to question the soundness of the phrase before?
Well, yes, absolutely. No matter
because
what
there was
language
no,
it was in, it was a different one than English.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it may have had a better roll off the tongue in that language than Wolf and the Lamb does here.
Yeah.
But the meaning doesn't matter.
And
why not?
And over the years, how scriptures have changed and all that
the
stuff.
The Bible can always be improved in English. It wasn't written for us.
Well, and when there are things...
Take a little license.
And when there are things in the Bible that are, like, sort of even, like, fundamentally different from what they might have been in a different language.
Yeah.
That's an interesting conversation.
Demons.
When it's a conversation about the difference between a lion and a wolf, that is not an interesting conversation. That is something you should just let go of. Coach does a whole show on it. Now it's time traveling demons. This guy is dumb.
I like to live. I sometimes I'm jealous of that world where it's like you can turn. Oh, I remember it being lion and the lamb, and instead it's wolf and the lamb. instead of thinking maybe I got it wrong, I'm going to go with demons.
Or try and come up with an explanation based in like how our brains work.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just, it's a very simple thing. And when you look at, if you include the, like, especially modern phenomenon of trolling, which is the case with that,
yeah, of course.
The Sinbad being in Shazam.
Right.
Instance. But like a lot of these other ones that are kind of weird, because there are some that I've even been, like sort of taken aback by. Like, oh, that's not what I remembered. But
like what?
Well, there was one that me and Marty DeRosa did an episode of our podcast, That's What They Want You to Think, about this young lady who was found dead in the water tower of a building, a hotel, the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles.
Right, but that's what you want me to think.
Right. But when we did the episode, I thought that it had happened years before. And it happened fairly recently to when we did the episode.
Uh-huh.
And I had some sort of idea in my head that this happened a ways back. I've known about this.
Right.
That sort of thing. And I expressed that on the episode that we did about it. And after the fact, I got some messages from people who were like, I also thought that happened years ago.
Yeah.
And it's unclear exactly why we thought that. It's a collective misremembering.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly how to explain that one, but also, in Snow White, the Wicked Witch doesn't say "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?"
Uh-huh.
But we all remember it that way because that rhymes better.
It rhymes great.
There's I don't remember exactly what the quote is, but it's not that.
Why?
It's "Magic mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?"
Sure. Maybe we could just call. Let's rebrand the Mandela Effect from the Mandela Effect to
let's learn about memory.
Collective punch up. You know, like we're all just kind of getting together and being like, you know what? That's not that great. I remember it better than that because that has a better ring off the tongue.
Totally.
So that's what it is.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's collective punch up.
But it's also like a version of insecurity, to not distrust your own memory. You know, like, cause you do have a skewed perspective on everything that's happened. It's always come from a subjective perspective.
Right.
And then on top of that, over time, you lose pieces as you
of course
intake more information, so it's not like
limitations of what your brain can hold. Like the simplest example is I can't remember what video it is, but it's the one where people are like bouncing balls back and forth to each other, and then you watch it the third time and then somebody's like, you realize there was a gorilla, there was a man in a gorilla costume
where
walking through there, and you're like,
is...
well, I didn't even know that. And you're like, okay, well, fine. Then the brain isn't trustworthy, so fuck off. I get it.
If you focus your attention on something, you miss something else.
Yeah, exactly. So fine.
And then with Berenstain Bears, like, of course you thought it was spelled Berenstain. Stain is a normal suffix for names. Stain isn't.
Right.
So, of course, and you read those books as kids. So, like, or you're reading them to a kid and you don't give a shit who wrote it.
Or you are an anti-Semite. That's also possible.
Any of those things are possible.
Yeah.
So anyway, another similarity with Alex Jones comes up, towards the end of this Mandela Effect episode, and that is.
Collective punch up episode.
He doesn't turn off his phone while he's recording.
Why is the, hey guys, listen to me. I don't know what's going on with the Mandela, but those of you sitting in your churches every Sunday comfortable understand what's going on in the world that people are seeing. And I got to call him back. I'll tell him.
It's the president.
I'm in the middle of my show. I'll have to call you right
back.
Wait,
he's in the middle of a show. He answers you. Please,
will you guys understand everything I bring to the table? I don't say this is fact. This is truth. I'm saying, have you looked at this? Have you looked at this? You just Google Mandela Effect and see how much information you see on the Mandela Effect. And does the average person sitting in the church, have they ever heard of the Mandela Effect? And I would say no. They probably never even heard of
it. Is it in the Bible?
And I would posit
change the Bible.
That some of it might
have to be dealing
with the demonic realm.
It has to be.
You've nailed it.
I would posit that as well, Dan.
I mean, all right, great. So we have here.
It has been noted.
I wasn't saying great to you. I was saying great is more in general about his position. It's like, so this is some hot shit. I like that he's like, I think, and I'm putting forth the idea that this is demons and it's CERN's fault and all this. But also, do you fucking understand that the things that I bring to this show are not truth? They are just. That's him trying to
wiggle. But you know what? Now you all Googled the stuff that I lied about. and probably believe those lies because of the lies that I believe.
Well, and it's his way of trying to wiggle out of talking about stuff like this in an irresponsible way. But he wouldn't want that same standard applied to when he talks about God. Like, I'm just saying things. I don't know if they're true. Well, if that's what your show is, you talk about really bigoted opinions about things that you think God is telling you to talk about a lot. Is that just not true, possibly? It's just things you think? Because if that's the case, that's on you.
Mm.
That's on you. That's not on God.
Well, God isn't giving him any guidance on this Mandela Effect episode, so he's not too sure one way or the other. Obviously, because demons have changed his memory when God started talking to him about the Mandela Effect.
If you recall, at the beginning of this episode, I played the intro to Pass the Salt, and it specifically says that everything is that's said on this, this show is God-inspired.
Inspired by the word of God.
So.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that. Mandela Effect.
Anything is possible.
Exactly.
So, Jordan, now we're going to get to some less fun elements of this gentleman, this coach. And in this next clip, we start an episode that was a couple days after Charlottesville.
No!
And some of the stuff he has to say, first of all, I'll say is profoundly stupid. Like, not...
That's
not,
better than how it...
Well, there's going to be some
All right,
of that
well, okay, there
too.
We go. Never mind.
Some of it is just patently stupid. And I'm like, I don't understand why you think you know what you're talking about. And then the other stuff is dangerously bigoted.
Great.
And we get into it here in this next clip where he explains what he thinks is really going on with the folks who are protesting.
I don't want to know that.
Yeah, you're going to have to find out.
Damn it.
And I hope that when my funeral comes that they don't have to stand up there and lie about me. I hope they're going to be able to stand up there and say nice things about me.
They won't.
I did some good things. I did some bad things. What are they going to say about you when you die?
He had a 14-0 record.
You know, Abraham Lincoln was a scoundrel. They just won't tell us that he was. He's a scoundrel. Martin Luther King was a womanizer. We know that. Probably a communist. You're not allowed to say that, though. It's probably
a socialist.
Right-wing watch. Because what they're doing is they're rewriting history. And so what's going on, I talked about this yesterday, Western civilization's under attack. They're trying to tear down all of our heroes. And what? Come on now.
Lincoln was gay, dude. Let it go.
The heroes in the South, specifically.
Oh boy.
Well, I hit the pause button. Can anybody tell me why they are so intent on tearing down the Confederate heroes?
Yes.
Coach, they still consider us the Bible Belt.
I'll say that again, Ray.
Yeah, right.
Well, they consider the South the Bible Belt. That's the stronghold of Christianity in this nation.
Not why we call it that.
Isn't it
unbelievable?
Ray.
That's it.
You guys know Robert E. Lee was a great Christian man, don't you? You know that? They don't teach us that in history. He was a great Christian man.
We don't have time to talk about Robert E. Lee, so we won't. Calm down. So it's an attack on Christendom. Christianity is being attacked by these godless liberal forces that have interjected whatever.
And what is it they really have against slavery? Like, really?
Well, they really – well, I mean, they're people like Coach and all the people who are weirdly chiming in, they have no interest in talking about that.
No, but I mean, like, what do they have against it? Like, what is that? What is it with all these liberals trying to rewrite history and say slavery was bad or something?
They don't bring that up at all, except for a little bit later, one of these people on YouTube does say, like, it's such a myth that it was about slavery. It was about states' rights.
Sure.
Oh, what
sure,
a tired
sure,
argument.
Sure, sure.
You guys.
Yeah. All right.
Do better.
Just say you want slaves. Come on.
So in this next clip, we get just sort of more, explication of the same theme, which is just that Christians are victims.
Coach, you're struggling. Here's what I'm struggling to get you to see, folks. They're rewriting history. The left.
Demons are? Oh, the left
is. The winners write history?
Sure.
Shakespeare said, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your phrase. The good that men do is buried with them. No, the evil that men do is buried with them. The good is often carried with the bone. So let it be with Caesar. And then he went on to praise Caesar. We make up stories about people who die. We make up stories. We pick and choose what we're going to know about, what we're going to remember about. We used to remember that George Washington chopped down a chariot. He chopped down a chariot. He couldn't tell a lie. I was Abe Lincoln. He couldn't tell.
Nope.
Oh, boy.
Wow. That was, that was nuts.
That is a lot.
That's a Mandela effect.
That's a lot to be wrong about at the same time.
They were righteous, holy men. Not anymore. Everything's changed. And everything's changed because they're trying to do everything they can to undermine our Christian civilization.
So that is really what he believes is going on.
Just say you want slaves.
It's an undermining of our Christian civilization.
I know, but just say you want slaves.
See, but here's the problem with you. You're so focused on race and this idea of racial clashing and all that stuff. And little do you know that that is just a tool of the CIA.
I did not realize that.
You should have known that from all the times Alex says it. And what do you know? Coach believes that too.
Great.
This whole idea of race wars is a CIA made up concoction. And the churches are completely and totally consumed by it, divided by it. I did a little bit of Facebook research yesterday. I can't believe the people who don't.
I did a little bit. That, at least he's more honest than Alex is.
I am a white nationalist. Any white nationalists on here with me?
What?
Hey, Vince, are you a black nationalist?
Did you just say you're a white
nationalist, baby?
You're a nationalist. You believe America first, right? You believe you're America first. Now, if you're a black nationalist, does that mean that
you
think blacks are superior?
You're not allowed to say black anymore.
Of course not. If I'm a white nationalist, does that think I think whites are superior?
Yes.
Of course not.
No.
They're the ones who told me my color. I should be a Christian nationalist.
No.
Not a white one.
That's even worse.
All they're doing the same thing is to try to divide and conquer the church. You better not miss. All of that stuff going on down in Charlottesville, all of it.
Oh,
right wing watch, this will be your headlines tomorrow.
No,
Everything that's going on down in Charlottesville is to try to get the white Christian man to shut his mouth and go into hiding. That's all it's designed to do.
I'm fine with that if that it was.
Black Lives Matter marching in the street.
Oh,
they honor homos marching in the street.
Oh, no.
Boy, when the white guy comes out, it's racist. Racist.
The reason for that is the times that people call white people marching racist is when they're marching for racist reasons.
No, it's because they're celebrating.
No, it's not that.
No, it's like how the Pride Parade is also all about how all other gender orientations should be subjugated, right?
People don't have a problem with like St. Patrick's Day parades. It's all white.
That doesn't sound right.
So look, here's the problem here.
When is it national, not St. Patrick's Day?
Here's the problem. Coach is a white nationalist, but he also doesn't understand what that term means.
I think he does.
Coach seems to be beholden to a very stupid idea, namely that the term white nationalist just means that he is both white and a nationalist. And that is not at all correct. That's what he's expressing in that clip. He's just saying that I happen to be a nationalist. I believe that our country should come first in the world, and I'm white, not recognizing that white nationalist is a compound term. White nationalists very specifically believe that the country they have nationalist feelings about needs to be dominated by their race. In our present situation, they believe that the United States is a white country and must remain a white country, and thus things like immigration, multiculturalism, and miscegenation are outright attacks on the continued survival of the white race. While this is pretty clearly a racist position, most white nationalists are cowards, and they hide behind the idea that what they're concerned with is preserving the culture.
Bah.
Unfortunately, this too is an absurdly racist idea, because its very suggestion implies that the existence of non-white people in a white culture would make the culture that's created inferior than it was before. Right? I mean, otherwise, I don't understand you wouldn't be arguing about it, like, if it makes it better, if it makes all culture better.
Right.
So
I think it'd be a fine argument if there were like 50 white people left and you were like, oh yeah, we need to preserve that culture
because
they're going extinct.
Sure. Now
that's perhaps, not the case.
Perhaps yeah.
That's super
in
the duper
same
not
way
the case.
That we protect like those visited tribes,
exactly
and stuff like that. So, but the argument has to be that we're protecting culture, and by that it means that non-white people coming in ruins the culture.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Makes it worse.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the only other approach I can imagine would be to argue that culture is static and unchanging, and that white culture that exists now or has ever existed is exactly the same as it's ever been. Of course, this is also a stupid idea. There's no set culture that these people seek to defend other than the status quo, where whites assert a dominant level of political, financial, and social control over non-whites. Of course, because this is an ideology that is on the one hand purely based on race, and at the same time desperate to appear like it's not, it always inevitably leads to super fun arguments about what kind of white is white enough. You see this idea pop up all the time when white supremacist worlds start talking about how Jews, they look white, but they're not.
Right.
You see it in World War II, how Hitler ordered war crimes against the Slavs because he felt that they had dangerous Jewish and Asiatic influences. They weren't white enough. This argument always ends up cannibalizing itself to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And this is the nature of white nationalism. It becomes a definitional thing in a way that doesn't reflect what reality is, or even like whiteness. We've talked about this all the time. It's an exclusive idea.
Yeah.
It's always been an idea based on defining who isn't white, not who is. And when you dwell in that sort of a world, white nationalism is specifically about retaining power in the people you deem white enough.
Of course.
I don't believe that Coach understands that. I really think he's
You're giving
stupid.
Him that benefit of the doubt.
No, I think he's stupid.
Okay.
Because you can hear it in his voice. There's like, I'm a white nationalist. I'm white and I'm a nationalist. I don't think he understands that there is a thing that is white nationalism as an idea. I think he thinks it's two discrete ideas, being white, which is just coincidental, and being nationalist, which is his position.
You're giving him a lot of the benefit of the doubt.
I've listened to enough of him to know that he is fucking stupid as shit.
That's true. I've listened to him enough to know that he's fucking stupid as shit.
I think he is a huge bigot, and I think he could accurately be described as a white nationalist.
Uh-huh.
But I also don't give him enough credit to think that he knows what that means. I think he feels those things, but doesn't... He hasn't done the homework to even deserve my scorn on that on that level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. I see what you're doing.
I pity him, but it's not from a place of like, I think, like he's 60 something years old or whatever. Like I don't think that he has Alzheimer's or he doesn't
he's
know what's going on.
He's just a dumb old white man. He just doesn't. Which we know he has so many examples
he's
of.
He's unwilling to put in the amount of work that's required to talk about these subjects.
Right.
Even in an elementary way. Like I think if we put in much more work, we could talk about them much deeper than we do. But he's just totally fine with not even the surface. The ether above the surface. The flowing wind of nothing.
Yeah.
So anyway, in this next clip from the same episode, he ends up talking about a source of information that he is into.
This just came out today from the New American. The New American is the John Birch Society.
Oh, God.
I'm on their
mailing list.
Jared. Thanks. The New American came out. Look, attacks upon Robert E. Lee statues betray historical ignorance. You did see, didn't you, that other cities now want to tear down the statue. They want to tear them down. I want them to tear down the statue of Margaret Sanger. Anybody with me on that one?
Where's that statue, dumb fuck? Like, what specific statue of Margaret Sanger are you talking about?
The one in, let's go with...
Are there even, like, conservative protests at Margaret Sanger statues?
Yeah, all the time.
But even if there were, I don't think anybody would be like...
So many.
Wouldn't end up in a fight.
No, there's the one in... You know that Margaret Sanger statue?
Yeah, we all know about tons of Margaret
Sanger
statues.
You know the Margaret Sanger statue?
The fuck out of here. The fuck out of here with that stupid
the
nonsense.
The one in...
Here's the thing.
The Sanger statue in the famous one...
I'm not going to deny that there probably is a statue of her somewhere, but he doesn't cite where there is one or what's making him mad. It's just the idea of her having a statue. And while I'm on the subject, I'm fucking down with her having a statue.
Yeah.
He and I could get into an argument about why. That's not relevant. I just think he's trying to pull some sort of name that he thinks there's a statue of somewhere in order to beef up his claims. Now, hold on. The John Birch Society put out this article in the New American where they said that criticisms of this Robert E. Lee statue, they express a misunderstanding and
I was about to start yelling about
a
that.
A complete
Thank you
lack
for
of awareness of history.
Yeah.
Right?
Complete lack of awareness.
The Robert E. Lee
statue. Definitely not a larger awareness of history.
The Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville is what centered around the protest that ended up revolving in a murder and
murder that is now legally confirmed. He was convicted of murder. Yeah,
I had not been keeping up with the day to day.
Today, he was convicted of murder.
Now you're giving up that we recorded this almost a week in advance.
Sorry about that.
Come on, we're trying to pretend this is.
No, we're relevant.
So the statue is at the heart of the matter.
Yeah,
and he's reading this John Birch Society article about historical ignorance about it.
We're also ignorant.
Now, here he starts to read from the article and then editorializes on it. Then I have a very important point that I'm going to make after this about how he is ignorant of history.
The New American, taxpayer Robert E. Lee, betray historical ignorance. You ready? Listen to this. After the tragic events in Charlottesville, Virginia, precipitated by the city government's decision to remove the statue Confederate Robert E. Lee from Emancipation Park.
Yes, that's why they were invented.
Isn't that something? Robert E. Lee is in Emancipation Park. So they put a park up honoring the fact that the slaves were emancipated, and they put Robert E. Lee in the middle of it. Why? Because they knew who he was, not who they're telling us he was.
Huh?
The people who put up the statue of Robert E. Lee knew who he was.
So I want
I
want to talk to you about this statue. The statue of Robert E. Lee that was erected in Charlottesville, Virginia, was commissioned in 1917, a good 52 years after the end of the Civil War. The mid-1910s in America were an interesting time from a race perspective.
If I understand my history correctly, there were a lot of statues that came up in the South around that time.
Certainly, and then also during the Civil Rights era.
Yeah. Almost as a way of rewriting that history in order to support their own arguments for why they should continue the mistakes of that history.
You've hit on the bigger point, but let me walk us through it. So in January 1916, Carter Woodson, considered by many to be the father of black history, founded the Journal of Negro History. In October 1916, Margaret Sanger started her family planning organization in Brownsville, Brooklyn, which aimed to provide health care to impoverished, largely non-white communities to give them control over their own bodies and choices. In March 1917, the Jones Act granted Puerto Ricans citizenship. In July 1917, a labor dispute exploded into a race riot that left 250 people dead. In August 1917, The Messenger, an African-American political and literary magazine, began distribution. It was a wild time, as significant progress was taking place in terms of race relations, and simultaneously there were still high-profile lynchings and plenty of outright racist violence that was completely state-sanctioned. The issue here is that the time was one where it was clear that things were changing. Moves were beginning to be made to empower the disempowered. Disenfranchised communities were beginning to create their own spaces, whether it be these publications or Hubert Harrison up in Harlem. But it was also a time when terrorizing minorities was still totally okay. Oh, and Birth of a Nation came out in 1915, which led to the founding of the second Klan that same very year.
Yeah.
So we're living in the aftermath of that, and this is the stage upon which our play takes place. The statue of Robert E. Lee, as well as the accompanying statue of Stonewall Jackson, was paid for by a guy named Paul Goodloe McIntyre. The park that contains the statue was also paid for by McIntyre, and it was called Lee Park. It wasn't renamed Emancipation Park until 2017, the year that Charlottesville City Council voted to remove the statue. So his whole point about the Emancipation Park, and they made a park in honor of the Emancipation.
What a historically
ignorant fuck. So his whole premise is completely blown out just from that.
That is bananas.
Yeah. They renamed it Emancipation Park in honoring of taking down the statue of
Robert E. Lee. Yeah, I was going to say, it did, like, whenever he started screaming about that nonsense, I was like, the only way that makes sense is if they made the park
like an Orwellian nonsense.
Yeah. They made the park. Everybody saw the statue and they're like, you know what? Fuck that guy. Let's make a park around this and make an ironic name called Emancipation Park.
And it took till
2017. In order to give him a fuck. Yeah.
2017.
No, we're doing great, Dan.
Of Paul McIntyre, University of Virginia history professor John Mason said, quote, he was somebody who deeply believed in the cause of the South, was honorable. He believed that the cause was honorable and that the people who fought for it, especially Lee and Jackson, were heroic figures. He was part and parcel of what historians now call the lost cause, this idea of the noble South, which celebrates a romanticized view of the Confederacy that stripped away slavery, stripped away the brutality of slavery.
I can't imagine why they would
stripped away
do
the
that.
Heartbreak of slave sales, stripped away all the ugliness.
I don't get why white people would want to change that history.
So while McIntyre was a super philanthropic person who gave generously towards the goal of beautifying the city of Charlottesville, it's important to point out that most of the things he was paying for were all segregated.
Do you mean whiteifying the city of Charlottesville?
Lee Park, where this statue of Robert E. Lee was erected, was a whites only park. The same is true of The same is true of many of the schools and libraries he paid to establish in the city. As Professor Mason puts it, quote, that new public library was segregated. He gave money to schools. The schools were segregated. So everywhere you look, McIntyre's gifts, while in the eyes of white Charlottesville, are beautifying the city and honoring its glorious past. If you look at them through the eyes of black Charlottesville, they're enhancing the segregation of public spaces and celebrating the defense of slavery. So while it would be...
So you could call him a white nationalist.
While it would be beyond my knowledge to express that Paul McIntyre's desire was to participate in the systematic terrorizing of the black population who is beginning to make progress towards greater equality, it's not beyond what I know to say that that's exactly the result of his actions. Widening the educational gap between white and black students, creating beautiful public spaces where black citizens weren't welcome, then in those supposedly beautiful spaces creating idols to the revisionist history that minimizes the history of the enslavement of the, what, parents of then residents of Charlottesville? It's pure racial terrorism. There's no two ways about it. On some level, I know that people like Coach understand this, and they're carrying on that tradition themselves. They probably don't realize it, but I know on some visceral subconscious level, they fucking understand that.
Absolutely.
And that's the historical truth of all of this.
Where there's smoke, Dan, there's probably Nazis burning books.
But that's the historical truth of all this. He's talking about this John Birch Society article about how there's revision of, it's a historical ignorance about Lee. I don't even want to fucking talk about
Lee. Yeah, no,
Let's
I don't.
Let's talk about that statue.
Yeah.
That's the truth of that statue. So what are you going to do with that? You're just going to lie about it, and you're going to argue that the ultimate bigotry in the world is against whites.
What do they call the South? Don't they call that the Bible Belt? Isn't the South the Bible Belt? Don't those in Washington, D.C. and George Soros and all those God-haters?
George Soros?
People down in the South.
What are we doing? What are we fucking doing?
They're hicks with no teeth and a piece of straw in their mouth. Come on, don't they think that's what they are? Isn't it the awful... Isn't it the ultimate form of bigotry of what they think about those Southerners who want nothing more than to preserve their heritage?
The ultimate form bigotry.
And he dropped George
thinking,
Soros in there. Isn't
is
that fun?
Thinking the ultimate form of bigotry, Dan.
Right.
The ultimate. The apotheosis of bigotry is characterizing white people in the South as having straw in their mouths.
And missing teeth.
Yeah.
I do agree that that's actually a stereotype that has outstayed its welcome. I believe that, especially as somebody from the heart of the Midwest and someone who's been to the South. And, like, I don't fancy myself like a country boy or anything like that. But I know a lot of country people, and I love them. I haven't grown up in the situation that I have and being so inundated with people that most people think are hillbillies or hicks.
No. I would call you a hick sympathizer.
Absolutely. I'll wear that. I'll wear that for sure.
It's not an insult.
No. There's so much. Like, I do believe that our culture as a whole does get too much mileage out of making fun of hillbillies.
Yeah, but that's...
And even the term hillbilly is a little
just,
bit...
But, I mean, that's just like, I believe all hack jokes are bad. Like, I'm fine with that.
Sure, if we want to go one by one through them, I think it might do us all a bit of good.
Yeah,
but I
can help.
The only point I'm making here, because I'm not going to validate his points at all, but I do think that there is a kernel of a fair point in a lot of angry white dicks in that punchline has been totally fine. And just because you walk around, like, in the South and you hear a bunch of people talking, like, doesn't mean that they're dumb. It doesn't mean that,
of course not.
It doesn't mean that people are have less value because of it.
Of course not.
You validate your own biases by finding people who fit close to stereotypes.
Right.
And I think that it goes unexamined more for hillbillies than others. But and again, I keep saying hillbillies, and I don't. That's not the word I would like to use, but it's what I'm choosing to use. For the white.
What about the ones from Beverly, though?
Wow, those guys were rich. the caricature of the dumb Southern white guy is an unfair archetype. But
it's somebody from Chicago going to anywhere in the world and saying, "Look at how funny these people talk. Let's make fun of them." I get that.
You didn't let me finish my thought.
I didn't.
The end of that thought was going to be on the grand scale of bigotries. This one doesn't underlie a deep tradition of, let's say, slavery or those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So I think it does, we talk about triage a lot. Like, there are problems.
I was about to bring up triage, yeah.
We can recognize that there are 100 problems, and we will sometimes not talk a ton about problem 70 because problem 1, 2, and 3 are pressing.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And I kind of think it's that same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now, people like Coach probably argue that white is number one problem, but
that is elucidative of what the problem is.
A little bit. So I this is the last clip from this episode. The biggest point that I want to make is that he doesn't understand what the fuck the conversation is about and what that statue was, what it represents, the context of its construction. Like, there's a bunch more of these, like, statues that came up, like, made by the Daughters of the Confederacy and stuff
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Largely speaking, they came up, and were erected during periods where non-white people were making inroads into, power and that sort of thing. And it was used as a terroristic tool. It was a reminder of, we enslaved you.
Okay, so what you're saying is that during time periods where in America traditional minorities make gains in how they live their lives, white people, I don't want to say overreact. I'm going to instead say go batshit fucking insane in order to try and destroy any gains that are made.
And memorialize in an intimidating fashion in public spaces the history of repression.
And rewrite that history in order to make it look like
benevolent.
They weren't the oppressors, but in fact they were the oppressed at the time.
Right.
It's co-opting the very oppression that you are acting upon.
Statistically, that does track. So we have one more clip, and I think when I made that argument when he started talking about how he's a white nationalist, I do believe that he's dumb. He doesn't know what the term means.
In as far as the term,
yes.
Not his actual beliefs.
No, I think he is a white
nationalist.
He's
a white nationalist, but he doesn't know that he's a white nationalist. He thinks he's a white nationalist, but he's a white nationalist.
And I think that this clip better makes my argument that he's stupid and doesn't understand the conversation that people are having.
Okay.
See, they are making, it's part of the deal. They're making all white nationalists.
I don't like the way he says white either.
All of them. David Duke. All white nationalists, why they are KKKers and they believe in white supremacy and they want to put blacks in jail and lynch them. Isn't it funny? It's the same thing they say that we do regarding women. We want to take away abortion and put them on their tennis shoes and put them back in the kitchen and take away all their jobs. Do you understand it's the same tactic? And do you understand that what is happening is brave? Well, that's not true. The average Christian man wants no part of it. He is going to hear no evil, speak no evil, and hear, I do this right, hear, speak, and see no evil. He is going to shut up, and he's going to have his six-pack of beer, and he is going to let the world go to hell. Except there's something going on, see? So it was very, very important for Soros
and
his crew when that party was down there, those white nationalists down there, nationalists meaning America first. I'm a white nationalist.
That's not the meeting they had.
I'm an American first. Yeah, I couldn't care less about race. I ain't got nothing to do with it.
They always
make sure
that when those white nationalists showed up, that there was violence. See, they're violent. Those white nationalists are violent.
Hey, Coach. Let me throw in real quick. They should change it. They've been doing this white nationalist crap all over TV. They should be calling us right-thinking Americans.
They are, Vince. But, Vince, our team is buying it. Our team's buying it. Our team's apologizing for white nationalists.
Who's on your team?
I'm not apologizing for white nationalists.
When you say team, who includes your team?
I think that he thinks of nationalist as a noun and white as simply an adjective that is describing that noun. A nationalist that happens to be white.
Right.
I think if you hear that, you just hear someone who doesn't understand. And in Charlottesville, there were white nationalists.
Yeah, but
there were groups like Identity Europa. There were groups that are specifically white supremacist groups there. So because he's so stupid and he doesn't realize that what he wants to defend is nationalism and like, why is it a problem then that I'm white and a nationalist?
Right.
Accidentally, and probably spiritually, what he's doing is vociferously defending Nazis.
Yeah, I was going to say. I get that he's not understanding the term in a grammatic structure.
Yeah.
But he is espousing the very beliefs that the...
You bet.
He is saying that he's not a white nationalist in the way that we are using the compound term.
Yeah.
But he's saying white nationalist things the way that we understand the compound term. That's dumb. That's astonishingly dumb.
Right. But I do think, and I'm not giving him like a way off the hook or anything.
No,
like
no,
that.
No, no.
I really don't get the sense that he understands even the conversation.
No, it's not like it's not like you're giving him credit. It's like you're taking even more credit away from him.
Which leads me to sort of the weird sort of place where I'm like, if he understood what white nationalist meant, would he
change his,
would he be against it or would he be for it?
And right.
That question I can't answer. Because then it would turn into optics and stuff like that of like, should I be defending these people who are Nazis?
Right, 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 right.
Should I do that? I don't know.
Well, the only thing I can think of
is open. It's nebulous. I have no fucking idea.
No, the only thing I think, while listening to this guy is that if it were still culturally acceptable to say the N-word, he would throw the N-word around all the time.
Spoiler alert, he does.
God damn it!
Not throws it around, but like he is so fine saying a hard R. Like quoting stuff.
Nah. This dude's a bad dude.
I don't have any clips of that just because it was like,
I don't want any clips of that on my show.
He had a long jag about the Democrats in the civil rights, time and the party, not talking about the party switch.
No, they never do that.
Yeah.
It's strange how they never do that. The Democrats are racist.
He demonizes Democrats using, N-words, and such, but
good work, dude.
Yeah. Who cares?
Oh man.
I don't know what to do exactly about his race stuff, except say it's fucking stupid. But like.
And racist.
But it's interesting to me, and that's why I think this is a possible someone who we can look more into and enjoy, because I sincerely believe that there is a chasm between reality and what he's understanding.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me. It is interesting to me that he expresses very clearly white nationalist positions.
Right.
Talks about how I am a white nationalist, but it's clear he doesn't know what he's talking
about. Yeah, 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 yeah.
That kind of stupidity, and brash, like, confidence is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't see that very often in people who have hundreds of hours of, episodes available for me to look at.
Yeah, he's bananas. And the way he said white, too, makes me almost... Like, almost.
It seems like it's just whenever he talks about race, that voice comes up.
Yeah, or not even just that. Like, it almost makes me concerned that anytime he says any color, it's weirdly red. Like,
orange.
Oh, I'm gonna, what? We're gonna see these pink people walking around here. Like,
you want me to watch the blue man group?
Yeah, have you ever seen Green Room? It's a great film, like, about white nationalists.
You know that at school they want to call people purple penguins? Alright. Yeah. So
how many more colors do we have and how much more time do we have?
I'm out, but we have got to get to the end of this episode.
Okay.
And unfortunately, we have one more, clip that Coach has put out. And in this clip.
Would you call this clip a red ball?
It's a red flag. dude, in this clip, it becomes clear that Coach is a little bit of a fascist also.
well, in his defense, if you are a coach, chances are you're a fascist.
It does seem to run count or parallel to.
Yeah, they have a lot in common.
This is my heart's a little bit heavy today, folks. I just.
I'm sorry. Are you okay? You
know, I'm a guy who studies the culture, and I just.
No, you don't.
I was on my computer, as happens with so many times, and all of a sudden, one of those little pop-up screens pop up, and the temptation to click on that thing and have some pornography come before my eyes was a very, very strong temptation. It's always, I don't care if you're a man, I don't care who you are, that's one of the greatest temptations in all of society.
God, his browser has to be disgusting with bookmarks and
this may seem really radical to you, but we seem to be rational people here in America.
Do we?
We want to ban guns.
Do
we? We want to ban drunk driving. We want to ban all kinds of things in America.
I reject your premise.
So once again, ban pornography. Hey, come on now. Pornography is not free speech. That is not a free speech issue.
It is.
Why not?
Here's the deal. Buddy, get a pop-up blocker. Get one of those like things you can put on your computer that just blocks all pornography. There's so many apps and like programs you can just install that like if you try to go to a porn website, it will just put up the nope, this is blocked.
I do not want to see
there's
his
so many
Internet
technological
Explorer toolbar heaven.
There's so many technological solutions to the problem that he's expressing. I don't want to be tempted by this stuff. Well, number one, that's on you. Choose your battle, buddy. Choose what you do in that. Aren't you a conservative? Isn't this about personal responsibility?
No.
So secondarily,
not free speech.
There are crutches you can use because people do have problems with online porn.
It can be an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. So those things, those like nanny things, they're there. You can use that if you don't want to be
child locks.
It is a free speech issue, my friend. And the reason that a lot of this is very important is things that we see in the world, like FOSTA and SESTA, those bills that went through that were pretending to be moralizing about like people advertising sex work online.
And all they wind up doing is demonizing sex workers and more.
They end up turning it into a thing where if someone kills or assaults one of them, it becomes incredibly difficult to track down who that person was. Mm-hmm. It forces sex workers to go out into the streets as opposed to being able to create their own safe spaces online where they can choose their clients.
Yep.
It creates an incentive for pimps to show up and start systematically abusing people. What he's doing is trying to create this moral idea about like, hey, it's bad to look at porn, so let's get rid of all of it. But the functional reality is what he's advocating for is further and way worse victimization of people.
But that's the entire rights policy. Tax cuts are the way to go. Now, admittedly, every time we run one of these massive tax cuts, it creates a massive government deficit that we ultimately hate, but ideologically, we still have to support tax cuts.
Yeah.
So, fuck that. We hate abortion. We hate the murder of unborn fetuses. Now, of course, we're against birth control because that's the same thing, only that leads to more murders of unborn fetuses. Oh, well, we hate abortion in all of its forms, so we're going to outlaw it. Of course, that leads to more illegal abortions, and it leads to more death. But ideologically, it sounds right, so we have to do it. We can't actually look at the result of the dumb shit we believe. Otherwise, we would have to accept that the dumb shit we believe leads to the worsening of the shit that we ostensibly are fighting against.
Yeah, the desire for control is real. The fake reasons we are saying we want these things to happen, they all fall apart upon closer analysis.
Yeah.
And just from a real baseline, hey, we're America standpoint.
Hey, we're America.
Hey, what is the problem with porn? It's a consensual act between adults.
Regulate it.
So,
I'm anti-regulation, but we need to regulate porn.
So, a consensual act between adults can't be videotaped for other people's enjoyment?
Nope. You're gonna, immoral.
That is a crazy slippery slope. Till now, we can't allow video on the internet.
I don't accept slippery sloper arguments. I'm in the right wing.
So it's nuts. Anyway, in this next clip, Coach sort of expresses that he hangs out exclusively with liars.
And I wonder if we were to go into not only a local church, if you go into any local business and if you were able to get an honest survey,
well, like a Costco,
how many people in that business or in that church are regular viewers of porn? You know, that's a dark, dark secret, isn't it?
Nope.
No.
It's nothing that
I think it's kind of an accepted open
nobody
secret.
Likes to talk about the fact that they're looking at pornography, because we know this, don't we? That the end result of pornography in most cases, men in particular are looking at pornography.
What is it?
It ends up in what? In masturbation. No man wants to talk about that. No man is proud to say that he does that.
My friend, you gotta hang out in my circles.
Dude, this is crazy. This is a lunatic.
As a professional comedian, a lot of people like to talk about it. And a lot of people enjoy it when you talk about it.
Also, I do.
Even if it's not that good to talk about.
I do remember this. Like, I'm not so old, or I'm not so young, that I don't remember, and maybe it's just a function of whatever age you are, but like, I remember it being very taboo in like high school.
Oh, for sure.
That sort of thing. There was a lot of like, everyone pretended they didn't masturbate and didn't look at porn. But as you got older, it's certainly not the most polite topic of conversation. You know, like you and I are good friends. But if we go out and get a drink, I'm not going to
we're
bring
not
up
sharing
porn stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at
we're
the same
not
time,
trading
I'm
that.
I'm not going to deny that I look at porn or something like that. I'm not going to create a false reality.
Wait, what?
I think he just lives in this weird false reality where everyone's like, absolutely
I think he just
not.
Watches a shit ton of porn.
Well.
And he's, look, I mean, I get it. You're wrestling with, your addiction, and I understand, and you lash out.
No. Nope.
Publicly, you try and destroy
it's
it.
It's so much weirder than that.
It's so much weirder than
you're
that.
You're close, but this story is so crazy. So here's our.
So I'm strangling a prostitute.
Here's our last clip, and it's where, sort of Coach makes his, plea about his position on pornography and how dangerous it is.
But even worse than that, pornography is destroying this land. It's destroying families. It's destroying careers. It's destroying, oh my goodness, our young people. I remember when there used to be standards in our movies that they were R-rated and they were GP. And now the stuff that comes across our movie screens is just unbelievable. It's insidious. But if you, like me, happen to be somebody who enjoys just being on the computer and doing research on the computer.
Nope.
And
this
understand
is game
how
show
easy
music, right?
Pornography is.
Is this his final answer?
Obtain, folks, we've got to ban pornography. And why is it in today's society that we are locking up people who merely view pornography?
What?
And we're not doing anything about those who produce it.
What?
It's a supply and demand type thing.
Wait, what?
And many people are finding their lives ruined because of an addiction they got to pornography. We want to stop smoking. We want to stop drug use. We want to stop all types of bullying.
What?
Pornography is the greatest scourge in America. And I say it's time for us as a God-fearing, decent people to once again ban pornography. This is Coach Dave Dobbenmeyer, newsofviews.tv.
You really needed to form that in the phrase of a question, otherwise it's not a correct answer.
Now, Jordan, it would be easy to see Coach's comments about pornography and write them off as just another right-wing Christian fundamentalist asshole who doesn't want anyone else to make their own moral choices. However, there's a larger reason why Coach has his specific complaints about pornography.
Because he has his own pornography production company?
Particularly the ones that don't make any sense. Why is he saying that people are going to jail for looking at pornography? That's absolutely not true, unless the pornography they're looking at is the illegal kind.
Is child porn that he knows people... Oh my God! Holy shit! He is the Joe Paterno of Jesus!
So that sentence in that one clip made me fucking curious as hell.
Yeah, of course.
The idea that he's saying that people are going to jail for looking at pornography, it's like, no they're not, unless that porn's illegal. It made me really curious.
Oh, no.
As it turns out, in 2007, Coach's son pled no contest to a felony charge of pandering obscenity involving a minor.
No!
In non-legal language, that means he was caught with child pornography. Coach's son's computer broke, and when it was taken into the shop, a bunch of pornography featuring underage girls was found on it, and the repairman called the police. According to the police, they found 37 still images and 26 movies. The files were labeled in such a way as to make it very clear that any person who had those files on their computer could not be unaware that they featured illegal acts. He was sentenced to 5 years probation and put on the sex offender list. To his credit, Coach's son stuck to the probation and engaged in rehabilitation. And from all sources I can find, including testimony from his therapist, he dealt with the underlying issues and has never reoffended. None of that is to let him off the hook. It's just to say that he was a super privileged kid who ended up being given a chance to save his own life, and he didn't reoffend. Now, this is most of the information that's available from court records and news articles, but I found a different document that shed some interesting light onto the case of Coach's son.
Oh, this isn't going to go well.
He'd been a teacher, which obviously...
Oh, no, this is super not going to go well now.
Well, he obviously had to quit that job when he was arrested for possessing child porn. So he needed to find a new career. Coach got him a job as an administrative assistant for a lawyer that he knew, and Coach's son began to find a passion for law. He went on to study and attended law school, graduating in 2011. At that point, he had to apply to take the bar exam, which presented an interesting problem that had to be decided by the Supreme Court of Ohio.
You can't be a sex offender and a lawyer at the same time.
You see, the issue was that the Ohio bar didn't allow admission of, quote, a candidate who has been convicted of a felony before the candidate is released from parole, probation, community control, post-release control, or prison. That rule, however, does not mandate the disapproval of applicants who remain obligated to register as sex offenders during the pendency of their applications.
Because nobody thought that would be an issue.
This was a technicality that they didn't know what to do with.
Yeah.
So they did an investigation, and the results of that investigation are public. From this document, you find that it wasn't just an instance of this guy having illegal pornographic
files. Oh, no, this is going to be a huge hammer, isn't
it? It was a habit.
Oh, no.
Coach's son had been downloading, trading, and sharing illegal pornography for 5 years at the point when he was caught.
Oh, boy.
They found, quote, he committed his offense as an adult, and despite his professed interest in videos depicting underage girls, or I'm sorry, teenage girls, some of the files found on his computer involved young children.
Jesus fucking Christ.
The Supreme Court of Ohio ultimately decided to deny his application, saying, quote, we are also concerned that even as a college student, Dobbenmeyer failed to appreciate the gravity of his conduct or the fact that the children depicted in those illegal materials were, in fact, victims of his conduct until after he was caught.
Holy shit.
So it's clear that he was up to some really bad stuff, but this podcast isn't about Coach's son. It's about Coach. In the investigation regarding Coach's son's application for the bar, his therapist, Candace Risen, was interviewed, and she said the following. Quote, based on her treatment, she believed that there were two primary issues. First, she believed that his repressed upbringing caused him to seek sexual experience vicariously rather than engaging in age-appropriate sexual conduct.
Yeah, of course.
She also found that he had developed anger toward and resentment of his father, who set high standards for him and who would have been subject to embarrassment if he failed to live up to those expectations. Hearing those sorts of things make it pretty clear why Coach thinks we need to ban pornography. And it's not because of God. It's because it's a convenient way for him to pretend to address the issues of his life without having to wrestle with the possibility that he is raising his kids in an abusive household that leads to this sort of thing. And again, none of this is to let his son off the hook. And the reason I'm referring to him as Coach's son is...
There's no need to put his name out.
Right. There's no... And anybody who looks into it can find it out. It's all public and all that stuff. But I'm not here to beat up on his son. I mean, I think he's awful, and this is terrible. That's a terrible, terrible behavior.
Yep.
I do appreciate the idea that he has been rehabilitated as best as is possible and all that. And so that's great. But the reality of the situation is Coach is coming out, and he's expressing this thing of we need to ban pornography. And in his pitch for it, banning something that adults can choose to do with each other and a lot of people really fucking enjoy and doesn't hurt anybody and actually helps a lot of people. So the rhetoric that he's putting out into the world specifically hurts sex workers who are by and large women. There are men, but it's a lot of women, and queer folk. The reason that he's doing it, it's very clear when you look into his past and his life, that's what's doing it. Because if he had a principled stand that was based on something else, in the middle of his pitch to ban pornography, he wouldn't say they're sending people to jail for viewing pornography. Because that's what they do when people view illegal pornography, which is what his son was doing for 5 years. He doesn't have a point. He's acting out.
That's fucked up. It's fucked up in a way that is even, like, to a certain extent, like, of course you empathize with this kid because his dad is this fucking guy, in the same way that you empathize with a serial killer when he's like 9 years old and his abuse is rampant and rife and monstrous. And you're like, I empathize with you. But at the same time, a lot of people get abused and don't turn into pedophiles.
That's true.
So I get that. But at the same time, a lot of people are pedophiles. And unfortunately, the way that human sexuality works, you don't always get to. And I don't fucking know. I don't have like an answer for this. This is just fucked up shit. And I don't have a like, God, I want this to be a simple thing where I can just. Be like, bah, I'm against this, well, you know? But that's what he's doing. He's turning it into something where it's like, this whole thing is not an issue. What's an issue is I get to say, this is the problem, and I have the solution, and it'll never be a problem again. And that's not how we live.
No, and he's pretending that the reality of his personal life isn't real. He's creating a fictionalized version of all of that in order to create ways to advocate for controlling other people's lives who aren't doing these things.
Exactly.
So, and the other thing that's, there was another clip I was going to play, but it just felt stupid. And that was a video coach put out about how the pedophiles are coming. In the same way that Alex talks about and when you see the reality of like, your son was arrested for sharing child porn for 5 years.
Yeah.
And only got caught because his computer broke and didn't realize that they would find it when it went to the shop.
Jesus.
And you got to imagine that he probably wouldn't have stopped if the computer hadn't have broken.
If he hadn't been caught, right. Why would you?
So him trying to create this very Alex Jonesian narrative of the pedophiles are coming.
Yeah.
With that awareness is very hard to look at. And then at the same time, I mean, we talked about this earlier. He started that Minutemen group.
Yep.
That advocated for Roy Moore. And spoiler alert, after all the news came out about Roy Moore, he put out videos, I stand with Roy Moore. So when you look at the concrete reality of situations, he's on the wrong side of everything.
Yeah.
He's pretending that he's on the right side, but everything is wrong. Everything. Everything. His idea of historical context about Charlottesville and slavery and the civil rights is fucking stupid. His position on pornography can't be trusted because he clearly is acting out some sort of unresolved feelings he has about his family. You can't fucking listen to him about the Mandela effect because you shouldn't listen.
Well,
to anybody
you shouldn't
about
listen
that.
To anybody about the Mandela except for accredited psychologists sure. who are studying
memory
it and are
experts.
Like, hey, yeah, this is fucking stupid.
But this is a mess.
This is a mess.
This guy is a mess.
This is a tremendous mess. Mm-hmm. There to oh man, and it's all the worse. It's all the worse because he's so clearly just fucking stupid.
He is very stupid.
It is all the worse.
He would if he
I would
if he wasn't
were,
stupid. If he wasn't stupid.
If he wasn't stupid, then I would fucking be fine with whatever misery occurs to this man.
But if he wasn't stupid, he would never have said. People are going to jail for looking at pornography
right.
in that clip.
Right.
That is a strong indication that he is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Because that's what's underneath it.
Yeah.
An anger at the idea that his son got in legal trouble for looking at child pornography.
When what really should have just happened is it should have been banned, except for it was and it is. And that's the problem.
Right. The law is in place.
Yeah.
And your son ran afoul of that law.
Yeah, we already solved that one,
well,
dude.
Well, you should be making a video
well,
about
we didn't even solve that one.
What,
we just
What you should
just
be
fucked
making
up.
A video about is I'm angry at my son. He caused shame for me because I consider him an extension of myself.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why it even feels kind of weird for us to be talking about this and why I don't want to say his son's name because it's the context of talking about him. So it's not like, it's not like what his son did is what he did. The only reason it's important is because it informs his rhetoric.
Right.
And
the way he puts it is that it's not something, the way he puts it is that it is something that is happening to him.
Yep.
In a larger sense.
Yep.
Not even like, and
we need
even
to change
more,
that with laws.
And even more unfortunately, not even something where he's like condemning his son along with it.
Can't do that. That's too much of an attack on himself.
Yeah. It is a condemnation of every other thing on this fucking planet.
Probably the gays, probably pornography.
What my son did. He was seduced by the gays. He was seduced by George Soros.
There was
he
a
was seduced by all of these things.
There was a pop-up.
Yep.
That came on his computer and he got addicted to pornography and then what do you know?
Yep. It has nothing to do with, everything is about personal choice. Except for when my family does something that is, their personal choice that went badly, then it's everybody else's fault!
And then we need to create near fascistic laws about what adults can do with each other.
Of course! That's the only way to keep our kids safe, Dan!
So anyway, this has been a fucking, roller coaster.
This has been fucked up.
I told you when we were talking about Charlottesville that there was still a hammer to come.
Was that hammer harsh!
Yeah. So if you guys, I do say, even all, having said all that we have, there's more in this coach basket that we can talk about. And if you want us to do more episodes about him, let us know. We may do that. I think that he is fertile soil in terms of the amount of content that's out there and a couple of things that I fucking know about him. And I kind of want to do episodes about.
So. I would be fine with doing future episodes of Coach.
Yeah.
I am against doing this episode of Coach.
We won't.
This episode, I don't want to do this. Now that we've got this episode out of the way, future episodes,
It's the peeling off of the Band-Aid of all this introductory information. It's a mess. But we hope you enjoyed this episode. If not, sorry. Also, we have a website.
It's knowledgefight.com. It's knowledgefight.com.
We're on Twitter.
It's at knowledge_fight.
We're on Facebook.
You've been to Facebook before, but have you been to our group?
Go home and tell your mother you're brilliant.
No, you have not, and maybe you should. Or if you have, keep on doing it.
Oh, boy, this is the exact opposite of last week's wacky Wednesday.
This is intense.
Last week
we had a heroic journey into fucking acceptance, and this week we have some sort of fall into the midst of destruction.
Look at the last 3 weeks. 1 week, this crazy preacher who wants to murder gay people. Second week, crystal child who makes good.
Third week, this guy who's adjacent to the guy who wants to murder gay people.
And has a bunch of really stupid and horrible things in his life.
Yeah. Wacky Wednesday is getting real wacky.
Yeah, it's crazy.
We should call it Whiplash Wednesday.
Yeah. Oh, that might be better.
That might be better.
So anyway, I don't want to say anything good about any of these people. So
nope.
I will say that Charles from Final Table and Rodrigo.
Oh, yeah, no, Rodrigo, they're both great.
They never killed anybody. But what they did
You can't
do,
prove that.
What they did do is express beautiful art through food. And it was so great the way that Charles especially would like pay homage to the ingredients that he was using.
I did notice that.
I thank the sea for this. Could come off as fucking super obnoxious, but somehow didn't.
Did from time to time.
It seemed reverent to me and I loved it.
They didn't just express themselves through that avenue though. They also expressed advocacy for renewable food sources.
Absolutely.
For vegetarian food sources.
Yeah.
For different ways of thinking about the things. Like, I think in the first episode they made a cricket taco or whatever?
Yep.
Yeah, they were trying to
bring awareness to alternative proteins.
Exactly. While at the same time making delicious food.
They had a point. They were awesome and they never killed anybody.
Charles
did not kill anybody.
Can't prove that.
But one guy did. Technically.
Probably.
And his name's Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.